Morning, everybody. Welcome. We're going to start, as we always do, with the Pledge of Allegiance. Tara, I understand, is going to lead us in the pledge. So if we could all stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If everyone else would remain standing for a second, please. The governor has asked that we have a moment of silence and flags have been lowered to half staff in honor and remembrance of Kelly Betson, U.S. Forest Service Specialist from Payson, who passed away February 7th, and the White Mountain Apache Police Officer David Kelwood, who was just killed the other night in the line of duty on February 17th. So we can have a moment of silence, please. Thank you. We can all be seated. Ask the commissioners and then the staff to introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Bill Brink from Elgin, Arizona, 5.5 hours away.
Good morning. James Guggenauer from Payson.
Eric Sparks from Tucson, who rode with Bill Brink 5.5 hours. It seemed like 10 on the way up here.
Good morning. I'm Jim Zeiler from St. John's, which is a little bit further than Elgin.
Good morning. Kurt Davis from Phoenix. Glad to be in Parker.
Mr. Chairman, Ty Gray, Director.
Good morning. Tom Finley, Deputy Director.
Jim Odenkirk, General Counsel, and Linda Pollock, Assistant AG.
One of the bittersweet moments we always have is when we have a change of commissioners. To my left is Jim Zeiler. His wife Christy, I think, is in the audience. He's been with us for 5 years. We all get to know each other. We may be from different political parties when we're appointed, but we certainly get to know each other very well from spending weeks after weeks together and working on problems that we hope help benefit Game and Fish. So I'd like to introduce Jim and let him say a few words. Mr. Zeiler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Director. Like they say, all good things must come to an end, and this is the end of the road for me. It's certainly been a pleasure. I hope that at our commission banquet that I adequately expressed my appreciation, my admiration, Mr. Director, for you and your staff, and for these good commissioners that I've served with over the past 5 years, this commission and commissions before. And it's truly been a pleasure and a highlight of my career. So with that, I thank you. And
I'd like to introduce Dr. Geiler and his wife Lisa. I'd ask them to stand. They're both here. And Doctor, why don't you come up and
thank you, Jim.
I know this is what you wanted to make
yes.
All 5 years worth.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
I also want to make sure and thank Christy, Jim's wife. Make sure that you know she attended most of the meetings and probably had to listen to the going up and coming back on the long drive. So thanks to her also.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to add on behalf of the department, what an honor it's been to serve under Commissioner Zeiler and get to know him and his family. They'll always be part of our family. We certainly appreciate everything they've done for us, and both personally and for the department and the customers of Arizona.
One of the things that we'd like, if people want to speak to the commission today, we have what's called blue slips. You have to fill out a blue slip, and it's presented to us up here, and then we will call you and give you a few minutes to speak to us. I think Officer Gene Elms is bringing up a few blue slips now.
Mr. Chairman, first we'll go to the awards presentations, and then I can introduce the agenda, and we can get to your blue slips.
Thank you.
So if Mike Sumner wants to come up and present the awards we have for this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Director, Chairman, Commissioners. Welcome, everybody, to Parker. Thanks to La Paz County Sheriff's Office for letting us use this facility, this Boating Safety Center. And there's a couple folks I'd just like to recognize in the audience there. Thanks, Deuce Miner, La Paz County Supervisor, for their support. We also tried to work with them on a venue. Things didn't quite work out, so we appreciate the assistance there. Thank you. So unfortunately, our first recipient here wasn't able to make it this morning, apparently, or maybe might be running a little bit late, but we'd like to recognize Jim Jones. Jim Jones is an experienced hunter with a passion for all types of wildlife. He's farmed in the Parker area for many years, and several decades ago, his family acquired the Mammon Mine, which is home to the second largest known maternity roost for California leaf-nosed bats. Jim has been providing access to the department and other researchers for long-term monitoring efforts spanning more than 30 years, and he supported the installation of bat-friendly gates to protect adit openings. He's resisted opportunities to develop the property, which happens to be an in-holding in the Gibraltar wilderness, primarily due to his concern for maintaining the habitat there. Jim has known field supervisor Dee Flager since she was a new wildlife manager in the Parker District, and he recently contacted her for advice on building a wildlife water that, in Dee's description of his the way he related, he said would benefit any critter, be it bat, bighorn, lizard, or turtle that wants to get a drink. So he plans to drill a 300-foot well, install a pump with a 2,500-gallon storage tank, and a 10-foot drinker with escape features for bats and other small animals. And the only thing Jim is asking of the department is technical advice and monitoring assistance to ensure that water is always available on site. So these are just some examples of Jim's dedication to wildlife and for his long-term partnership with the department and his investment in conservation. Jim is being recognized with this commendation of achievement. Thank you, Jim. And Dee, would you like to... Oh, he just made it in. Jim. Excellent timing.
Jim, they said a lot of nice things about you, so you missed all the fun. But here's an award from the Arizona Game and Fish, and we certainly thank you for all the things you've done for Habitat and your willingness to continue
well,
to.
Really appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. This isn't about me. This is about the critters and them getting a drink, sir.
That's what we heard. So thank you again. The critters, thank you, too.
Sorry, our next recipient, Dee, would you mind stepping up, please? So as I mentioned, Dee Flager is, she's a field supervisor for the area. She's been with the department for 27 years and started in Parker, been in the region her entire career. During the course of her career, she's continually demonstrated a strong ability to build relationships and develop effective partnerships. Her long-term credibility with local partners has produced numerous benefits to wildlife and outdoor recreationists. And examples include coordinating water tanker support from La Paz County for helicopter hauling operations to critical bighorn sheep catchments, recruiting a North Sector volunteer force to complement the regional program that's based out of Yuma, working with local OHV groups and stakeholders to promote responsible riding and supporting opportunities such as the Peace Trail and the development of associated staging areas, engaging with landowners to maintain access and develop wildlife projects, coordinating department support for the Parker Take a Kid fishing events. I'd like to recognize Walter Schantz here, who has been involved in that event for many, many years. Just celebrated its 41st anniversary this year, I believe. Thank you, Walter, for that. It's an incredible event, if those that haven't been there before. and garnering local support for multi-agency OUI enforcement efforts. Dee was also instrumental in implementing a pilot effort to have regional staff provide monthly watercraft registration services at Lake Havasu MVD until third-party agents could be brought online. And as of March 3rd, we're actually going to have a third-party watercraft vendor in Lake Havasu City. So it's been a long road, but thank you, Dee, for those efforts. So these are just a few of the things that make Dee an exemplary department liaison to the community she serves. Thank you, Dee, for your valuable contributions to community engagement.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, with that, we'll introduce the agenda, but first let me welcome Commissioner Geiler.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, will be operating off an agenda revision number one dated February 19, 2020. For the benefit of the public, agendas are available and located on the table by the door. If a member of the public wishes to speak to the Commission on any agenda item, please fill out a blue slip, also available at the table. Give that to staff and we'll ensure that you're recognized on the item you want to talk about. If you'd like to present the Commission with materials as part of your presentation, please place the materials in the inbox on the table by the door and we'll make sure those are distributed. If you want to address the Commission on something that is not on the agenda, we have a call to the public notice for that purpose. You can sign up for the call to the public and the chair will recognize you, and at that time you may make your presentation. In accordance with open meeting law, the Commission is not able to discuss or take action on any topic brought up in the call to the public because it was not noticed on the public agenda, but the Commission may refer it to a future meeting or ask a department staff to meet with you to address your issue. We are webcasting this meeting. However, the webcast is not interactive. The department will be accommodating comments and discussion from attendees at regional offices via video conference and electronic blue cards. With that, Mr. Chairman, we can go to agenda item number one, which is the call to the public.
I have two blue cards. The first one is Miner, Deuce Miner. Want to come forward and speak? Ask you to limit your discussion to about 3 minutes, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commission. I just want to take the opportunity to say good morning. I'm Deuce Miner, the District 2 Supervisor. So I wanted to welcome you to La Paz County. Appreciate you making the effort to be here. 5.5 hours is a nice drive. It's worth it, though, when you get here, right? Living in Parker, I make a lot of 5.5 hour drives to go most places, so I'm used to it. I get it. But I do appreciate you being here, and just wanted to say thank you for the relationship that I think our county enjoys with Arizona Game and Fish. And it was nice to see Dee Flager get recognized because we really appreciate her. I know I hear that from our staff regularly, and I have constituents that absolutely love working with her and the rest of the staff with Arizona Game and Fish. So I hope you enjoy your stay here in La Paz County, and I thank you again for being here.
Thank you
for your
coming.
Public service.
Walter Schutz. Walter, come forward, please. And Walter, I noticed the title is Take a Kid Fishing, so we're getting some handouts right now, so I'll be quiet and you go ahead. How's that?
Okay, I just want to thank the Commission and the Director for all the support that Arizona Fish and Game's been giving us. We could not do it without you guys. You need three things to make this a success. Got to have a place to put the fish, got to have tackle, then you got to have fish. So any one of them components in the program's done. I also want to express my gratitude to Dee. She's on our committee. So again, I just want to thank the Commission and hope that we can continue to have a relationship. And we just did our 41st anniversary. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Mr. Chairman, item two is state and federal legislation. Presenter is Ed Sanchez, legislative liaison.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Ed Sanchez, here this morning to give you a legislative update. I'm very happy to be in Parker, as you know.
I can hardly hear. You have voice issues this morning? Or?
A little bit. I don't know. I left the window open, I think, this last night.
It's not the story I heard, but okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know this may be old news, but I wanted to report that on Tuesday that, and you see the process here, it was a whole process going through, but as of Tuesday, the Senate confirmed our new commissioner, Dr. Geiler. So thank you very much for your, and I look forward to working with you going forward as with the other commissioners. So welcome aboard. just a little quick update. We're in day 40. It's a record number of bills this year, 1,581, a tremendous amount. And you can see it down at the legislature. There are bodies every day down there. You got to fight through to get to the committee. So so it's a been pretty amazing. One thing I want to note, there's a lot of talk about the budget, nothing yet, but I know things are happening, there are meetings happening every day on that. There's actually one more week of appropriation committee hearings next week, and so we'll probably be seeing some more real activity on that. But to note, as you know, we have on the governor's executive budget our $3 million for our fish hatcheries, and there was an indication from the Republican majority that there was strong interest in supporting that. I can't say it's a done deal yet, obviously, because they're still working on the budget, but things still look very positive, and we'll continue to monitor that, our budget. And coming up next week is our legislative day. We're pretty excited about that. We're changing a few things here. We have a new executive chef that's actually providing fish tacos, a little different, again, a little different angle towards and focus on fish hatcheries. I think for the legislative day this year, we're going to actually be focusing on our on our fish hatcheries and all the benefits of that for the state. So if you can all come, it'd be great. We're going to have a good time. And so now to the bills. This bill specifically, commission supported and directed, HB 2219, the private lands trespass bill. It passed unanimously out of the House, 60-0. It actually also passed, and David might have mentioned this too, last month, passed out of the committee 11-0. So it's sitting over on the Senate side, ready for its first reading. So we think probably by next week, if not the following week, they're just waiting for all the bills to kind of catch up. This was one of the very first bills that actually got through the House. So we're pretty excited about that. So it's looking very good for the outcome for this bill on the Senate side. Other bills that we're monitoring very closely, you know, we've had continuous conversation about the Livestock Loss Board and the cost avoidance language that we were emphasizing, and actually we started with that, and then a lot of other things were added to that legislation. Since then, there's stakeholder meetings. It's actually come back to the original, not quite exactly, but pretty much the intent of our initial legislation is back in both those in both these bills, and so those are looking good. They're going to be going forward. I don't expect any real issues, but we're going to continue to monitor these two bills. And then, HB 2274 appropriations, Lower Lake Mary appropriation. Actually this week, they're both pulled out of the committee and appropriations committee. So the last, today is the last day for committees to hear bills. And so it was important. There's an onslaught of bills being heard this week. There's one more week that Appropriations Committee is allowed to hear other bills. So there's an opportunity that HB 2274 may be heard, but we'll keep you posted on that. We'll know as soon as today. They'll be posting, if that bill is specifically on the Appropriations Bill for Wednesday. Oops, excuse me. And then the HB 2612 Appropriations Survey, Desert Tortoises. We've been working with interest groups on this issue. I think things are going very positively on this issue. We're not quite done with that. Being that it's an appropriation, we have to wait and see what happens with that. But I think with the other groups, it seems to be moving around in a positive way, at least from a game and fish standpoint. So definitely be keeping you apprised of this issue as it goes down the legislative road. HB 2594, the salvage permit for big game animals. And this allows issuance of salvage permit to possess and transport a big game carcass. It passed with an amendment this week, so it was very positive, passed unanimously, so I don't anticipate any issues with this issue going forward.
Ed, would you explain that bill to the public, what the change is?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Currently, if a vehicle hits a big game animal, that person, the driver, can contact law enforcement and acquire a salvage permit. Well, this bill expands that to anyone can be issued a salvage permit if they contact law enforcement and based upon some conditions. So it really expands that ability to acquire a salvage big game animal.
So if Commissioner Davis finds a carcass along the road, he can call and get a permit and take the animal home with him, is that it?
Possibly, within the conditions and timelines, yes. HB 2844 is the Gold Star Children legislation. And interesting enough, we were getting calls of this late last year, and we were looking into about some legislation. And fortunately, there was Representative Kern in West Valley. He also received some calls, and so he took it upon himself to introduce this legislation. And so that is moving. It was double assigned, but it got unanimous support to both committees. So we don't anticipate any issue with this bill. Been again, actually talked about quite a bit down at the legislature, and we're getting a lot of the credit for it, so that's good. HB 2749, Endangered Species Conservation, confidential information. These are two bills we're watching very closely. Griffin and Representative Griffin and Senator Gowan are both from District 14 in Southern Arizona. There's some concerns that we have on this issue, but both Representative Griffin and Senator Gowan have agreed to work with the department on language that would support our concerns. So we continue to work with both the sponsors on this. We anticipate by next week we'll have specific language that will allow us to continue to do the things we need to do regarding safeguarding confidential information and our ability to talk to our partners at the federal and state level. So we'll keep you definitely posted on this. There was also a little note on a little surprise, and I'll be getting more information as soon as I can on this, but Senator Gowan added an amendment on his bill this week that actually provides appropriation of $450,000 to the U of A for a statewide species survey. So we don't know what those specifics are, but I will get back to you very soon about those details, and we can go forward on how we decipher all this information. And 2858, the Salt River Horses Enforcement Bridge. I don't think we couldn't get through a commission meeting without talking about Salt River Horses, so I'll leave this for last. It was quite a committee hearing on Thursday. One of the concerns is that it was a jurisdictional issue. They were using some of our Title 17 statutes for law enforcement, and again, that's not the use for that specific legislation. And we got to the sponsor, and she agreed, to add an amendment to take that language completely out of this legislation. So. This bill is going to continue to go forward and have a lot of conversation. Fortunately for us, we're not going to be a part of it. So we were very successful in getting that done. So looking forward, we'll continue to kind of keep you apprised of this bill too. But for right now, our language is out of that. With that, a quick federal update. the president introduced his new budget, $4.8 trillion budget, released February 10th. It cuts domestic spending by 6%, or non-defense spending by 6%, and it proposes a $12.8 billion budget for the Department of Interior. We're continuing to work with groups like AFWA and Sportsman's Caucus to talk about the details about how this affects, that may affect sportsmen's and the department. And so we're going to continue to look at that and keep you apprised on that budget. One of the concerns, not really a concern, but we're going to watch the budget in specific in the game in the National Park Service and things like that, because we don't know what the Democrats are going to say. They think it's dead on arrival. As you may recall, that there was a budget agreement with the Democrats and the president for fiscal year 20 and 21. And obviously, he's already making changes on the budget fiscal year 21. So many think that this is another sign that even though he's requesting cuts, we probably may or may not, probably may not see this drastic cut in the budget. So, but we'll definitely keep our eyes closely linked to this. And then lastly, I have a bill I wanted to tell you a little bit about, the America's Conservation Enhancement Act. There's a bill, specifically Senate Bill 3051, that that passed the Senate by unanimous consent, I think in January 9th. And so an identical version in the House is sitting there waiting to be voted on the floor. And there's a big effort, again, by sportsmen's groups, AFWA, to get it to send a big message to the House to pass this bill, this legislation, as is. Because if it does that, then it goes directly to the president for his signature. Currently, there's more than 50 conservation sporting groups that support this legislation. So, and we think this is, again, like the PR Modernization Act, it's very close on getting to the president's desk. So we're trying to make that final effort to get it across the finish line. And just really quickly, some of the things... highlighting some of the pieces of the legislation is the National Fish Habitat Partnership Program and the reauthorization of the North American Wetlands Conservation Fund. Chronic Wasting Disease Task Force is going to be established. Exempting lead fishing tackle from unwarranted purview from the Toxic Substance Control Act and the EPA. And last but not least, the Livestock Loss Grant Program will be $15 million for I think it's wolves, grizzly bears, and something else. I don't remember. I can tell you that later, but yeah. Grizzly bears and wolves. So with that, I wanted to propose a recommendation to the commission and I will read it to you. It's the Arizona Game and Fish Department recommends that the commission support America's Conservation Enhancement Act, Senate Bill 3051 and House Resolution 925, and urge House leadership to bring H.R. 925 as currently written to floor vote as soon as possible.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to approve the recommendation. I would like to add one thing is that we sent a letter directly to our entire delegation with the commission's action and request their help and
Mr. Chairman,
House leadership.
Yep, Commissioner Davis. Yes, and we had the conversation with Chairman Gudenauer, and I would have that resolution. I'm not sure what happened to it. Dave was supposed to send it to me, and I couldn't find it this morning. So, yes, we have it earliest today to have. For your final review and signature by the chairman, we'll have a resolution or a letter, whatever you like. We can change it either way.
A second. Sure, a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you.
And that concludes my presentation.
Get some water or some lemon and probably help your throat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I could. Ed, first, on behalf of all the commission, it's great to see you behind the microphone again.
Oh,
Great work there. And I also wanted to comment, it's a busy time down at the legislature. I was down there one of the days and watched all that commotion going on. I know it's a busy time of year. Thanks to you and David for all the work that you're doing to stay on top of all these bills for us.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Gudenauer, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And we do the best we can, but we really like what we do, so it's that helps too. So thank you.
Thanks, Ed. Thank you, Ed. Mr. Chairman, item number 3 is Commission Priorities Update. Presenter is Kent Comedina, Special Assistant to the Director.
Good morning. I need the water, and I did not sing last night.
Were you in bed last night?
I went straight to bed at like 7:30, right after ASU beat Oregon in basketball.
And the U of A won.
Yeah.
NAU did not.
NAU, they still have basketball?
Not very good.
I'm out of work. Yeah, I'm drifting. I know. I'm sorry. It is good to see Ed back. Next time he comes up here, though, you need to ask him to sing something like Dust in the Wind. And if you say, he probably would do it. So yeah, I think it might be good. I think this might be a good time to maybe go back through how we establish these priorities and the metrics. We don't do this every time because it would just become repetitive. But just so for Commissioner Geiler and others who might want a refresher, the commission priorities are established by the commission each year at a workshop that we hold with staff together talking about the priorities, how we might adjust them or add or subtract, with the goal of keeping approximately 10 priorities and not getting too many or combining things that don't really go together. And it's somewhat of a task, but it's an important one, and it's working out well, I think, this year, and we've gotten a little bit better at it. Plus, we were able to add metrics to these priorities, which, of course, it takes us to the next level where they're actually seeing how these priorities are being implemented, which is really the bottom line on how that how we judge how we're doing. So this list here is the 10 priorities, and next to the priority is the name of the lead staff person who works these priorities and gathers all the data and presents the metrics to us here in the commission meeting. The first one is fiscal, and this is a Kurt Davis word, sociopolitical sustainment. I think we finally figured out what that is. It's not in any kind of law. It's not in Black's Law Dictionary. I don't think we have that. So as you see, each one has an objective statement. I'm not going to insult you by reading them to you, but the main thing to look at here right now is the metrics. You see there's two of those, $2 million within 2 years, which is part of a $10 million in 10-year goal, and also to increase active digital engagement of customers. Maintain state authority for conserving wildlife. This one's a little harder to have metrics on because it just doesn't lend itself to putting results into numbers. So we kind of use the green, yellow, red on these things, and we have a matrix of the issues that we deal with, and we talk about those from time to time, and we level them as tier 1, tier 2, or tier 3. Tier 1 are the main priorities that we spend a lot of time working on. We've heard about horses. That's part of the Wild Horse and Burro Act. That's one of the issues we deal with as it impacts wildlife and habitat, not that we have anything to do with horses directly. And I don't think we necessarily want to, but it does impact the habitat from time to time and does create litigation, which keeps our fine lawyers busy. So the next one is comprehensive wildlife management approach. This is Josh Avies. A few more metrics in this one. There's kind of a light shining on that. Wildlife enhancements, and analytical tools, recovery plan objectives met, percentage of disease episodes responded to. number of actions taken to enhance SGC, I can't see what that says, and number of times our data was used to inform listing or action, listing decisions or actions. And that kind of relates back to some of the legislation that Ed was speaking to a little bit earlier. Increase and improve sport fish opportunities. This is Chris Cantrell. Obviously, this is a place where fishing is king, and there are several priorities there. And a lot of these are impacted by the hatchery systems and how they are working. And so pounds of sport fish stocked, number of locations stocked, new communities established in community fishing, percentage of hatchery improvement. That's the one that's kind of controlled by the purse strings, of course, and the number of management plans completed. And I think they're doing quite well under the circumstances with the hatcheries. Proven conserve habitat. This is the priority that you will hear an extended presentation on by Don Larson, who I actually invited to come to the meeting today, unlike the last time. We were looking for him, and apparently we forgot to invite him to come up. But I did see him there, so that's good. And this is one of the ones that's very important, also one that that Ed talked about in legislation. Increase public access and improve landowner relations. Taken major strides in this program with Josh and Craig McMullen and Commissioner Brake and Commissioner Sparks. They spent a lot of time out on the ground looking at that, improving the number of acres secured for public access. And then one of the things that Commissioner Brake and I think Chairman Sparks wanted to really see was how many visits did we have out onto the actual land with the landowners. And that's one of these, couple of these metrics. But monthly number of access agreements gained, the number of agreements lost, number of landowner lessee contacts, and the number of total new contacts. Quarterly number of landowner lessee contacts made by, and the number of these that are new contacts, and number of monthly meetings with permittees about unauthorized closure of STL, which I would say is a gate. and the number of those resolved. And with our agreement with the other state agencies and the landowners and lessees, making progress on that, on those unauthorized closures. So that one has really turned around and going in a great direction as well. Promote fair tastes. Obviously, this is one of the more important ones, if you want to say, not more important, but more timely, because of the some of the things that, well, based on the context we're getting from the public, this is a hot topic, I guess I would say. Not important, more important, but a hot topic. So Scott Lavin runs this and is the chair of a fair chase committee, and it met a couple weeks ago, and Commissioner Guggenhauer's there, and I think that it's a very well attended meeting and some good ideas come out of there. Not everybody agrees on everything. We had a nice, friendly, spirited discussion about trail cameras, yay or nay. But it's not just about that. It's also about the outreach programs that Scott and Tony and the people put together. And some of those have turned out really great, and I think we're getting good response on those. So the metrics are completed already for FY20, but continuing to work on new ideas and responding to calls from the commission, to the commission or to us about different technology issues. Maximize officer field time. This is another one that clearly one of the more important ones in terms of getting out to the public. The presence in the field is everything, and that's where most people see us. I mean, we're probably not, you know, on C-SPAN here today with, you know, hundreds of thousands of people watching, but our wildlife managers have to do that for the most part, and other people in the field. It's a tough job. Law enforcement out all by yourself in the middle of the boonies is something that I find very... I'm surprised that we don't have more issues than we do, and that's totally to the credit of our wildlife managers and how they're trained to deal with that, being solo out there with going into places where you know everybody there also has a weapon or more, and it's a credit to all everybody in FOD currently and prior that we're doing really good. But also, it's not just law enforcement, obviously. We really need, and they have really upped their ability to be scientists in the field. And that obviously takes more time, but it's a balance that they do, and it makes it kind of hard to get people, I guess, Craig, to fit that mold. So it's not just people, it's not like hiring in a police department where people come in and say, well, I'll try this, and if that doesn't work out, I'll, you know, go to Truck Master School of Trucking. These are dedicated, serious professionals that have to like both of those things and be able to operate independently. It's a tough selection. So what this priority is, and Gene is the lead on this one, we have a number of customer contacts, and then we're going to discuss, I guess, fine-tuning this, I guess, would be the way to say it, Craig. Future, how we do the metrics, and then we're going to talk about that in November at the workshop. Comprehensive facility maintenance program and real estate strategy. This is kind of almost like two in one, if you will. The maintenance program includes all the facilities from the headquarters out through everywhere, the contracts branch and all of that sort of. And they've gotten some technical assistance and software to do some of that. But it also, and very importantly, it kind of works hand in hand with the state authority priority as we talk about how we do the real estate strategy, and that's Clay Crowder, who's imitating Jim DeVos today, except without the walker. Jim DeVos was doing his imitation of Harvey Weinstein yesterday at the office. I wasn't supposed to say that, sorry. Improved department processes. So one of the key tenets of the governor's program and plan. This is Pat Barber. It has to do with the AMS program that we spend a lot of time working on, and it's starting to bear fruit, I think, as people understand it and can work with it and work on processes in a organized way that everyone can buy into, and I think we're starting to get a lot of that. So I believe that might be the end of that. So If you have any questions about the metrics, I did take one class in biology at ASU. I did get an A, but that does not qualify me to answer questions. It was something. It was the 101. I think that might be the easier ones. I did represent police officers for a long time, but that doesn't mean I can answer questions about what they do, really either. So, if you have questions, when we're at home at headquarters, we have more people, more leads actually present, but we have one or two here today, or three. But if not, our fine assistant directors might be able to help with the answers to those questions.
Mr. Chairman, Ken, I just want to take a minute to tell you how much I appreciate this. I spent much more time before preparing for this meeting going through your presentation and the detail that you gave it to us, and there's a whole lot of work went behind this with a whole lot of people, and gathering that and putting it up really helps me as a commissioner on some of these items that I get asked about. I just wanted to tell you I thank you for the job you're doing, and hopefully we can keep that going, particularly now that we have metrics and etc. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Brake, and the credit goes to the leads that write up those metrics, and that's not an easy task on some of these that are a little more esoteric than others to quantify what it is that you're doing, actually. So,
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate it. I also appreciated the updates and kind of going through the whole thing again, I think is important to do. The reports are very interesting, and I know you had mentioned in protecting states' authorities is hard to measure, but from my perspective as a commissioner, actually it's not that hard to measure, and the department has done a remarkable job over the last several years of organizing all these events that we have going on simultaneously to that, and has gotten very good at seeing how some events that may on the surface may not look like how they may impinge on commission and state authority, but they do, and the department's got very good at picking up on those potential issues. And I take a great deal of pride if, you know, I look at the scorecard of success versus failure on these issues. And some of these issues are, you know, virtually impossible to achieve success. But the green bar is much larger than the red bar. And that, that's kudos to the department. Because I actually, and I know, you know, the other difficult thing is the list keeps getting added to, unfortunately. But this, all these measurements are important. This measurement, this priority, I believe, is essential, and I actually think sets an example for other states who deal with this issue. So I just wanted to commend the department. The reports, other than Chris Crantrell's massive failure in sports fishing stockings, which we all know this situation. The reports are very good, and I really do appreciate them. And I know there is work that goes into them, but it does help, as Commissioner Brake said. It helps in your role as a commissioner. But I also think it's a great reminder each month before we meet of really the level and significance of the activity that goes on in this very complex department. So thanks again to all the folks that work on and the leads that gather the data.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Davis. It was quite an effort to get Cantrell to take the metric off of how many brown trout he's killed in a year, but we did get that off. But yeah, we do have a team on the field now, which is great, in the state's authority arena. We've had that growing over the years, and we have a very organized way to address those so that we can combine all the things that we have, all of our abilities that we have, operations in the field, biological as well as wildlife managers. We have the public affairs part. We have the legislative part. And when all that doesn't work, we have attorneys, which are... the last stop, right, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Mr. Cantrell just texted me, and he did not appreciate the comments, so I'll apologize to him for it.
Well, we're up to one person watching. That's good. If there's no other questions, I'll invite Don Larson up to go into his habitat.
Thank you, Kent.
And there he is. See, I always look. I hope he's there.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. There it is. So today I'm going to go in a little bit deeper dive into the improve and conserve habitat metric that the commission has. So we have a target of 750,000 acres of improved habitat each year, and that is combined the work done by the regions and through the programs of the Landowner Relations and Habitat Enhancement Program and Terrestrial Branch and the Development Branch. And the Development Branch has their own sub-goal of completing 20 catchments per year, redevelopments, and that would contribute 160,000 acres to that total. We also report on fish habitat projects accomplished, projects or phases implemented throughout the year, and they have a goal of 6. So we had the same goal last year, 750,000 acres, as we do this year. That comes from water developments, grassland, restoration, prescribed burns, forest restoration, or riparian restoration. And the graph on the lower left, you can see we exceeded the acres improved last year. We had a total of 926,000. And this year, you can see on the chart on the lower right, we're on course to reach the target again this year. So one thing we're doing moving into the future is a refocused prioritization on watershed restoration or improving watershed help, or a re-emphasis on those type of projects. And what we hope to do through that is to return some of these landscapes to their historical condition. For example, historical grasslands that have been invaded by trees, returning those to a grassland state. And by doing this, we want to do things like improve hydrologic function, which could potentially raise the water table. For example, an average juniper tree drinks 30 gallons of water a day from the soil profile. If they do that 6 months of the year, there's 400 juniper trees per acre. And if we treat 10,000 acres, that equates to 68,000 acre feet of water that could be saved through a project, through a landscape project that treats up to 10,000 acres, which would be roughly equivalent to the amount of water that would fill Saguaro Lake. So significant gains can be had through these projects. By increasing the herbaceous component and the diversity of the herbaceous component out on these grassland restorations, we can improve nutrient cycling through the system, increase forage production, and reduce erosion as well. So what does this mean to refocus? So, you know, what we hope to do is achieve broader benefits on the landscape, those ecosystem services I just mentioned on the previous slide. And by focusing more on these type of watershed projects, more so than the traditional providing drinking water projects, we are trying to focus our efforts on the cause of the problem rather than the symptom of no drinking water. So there's higher upfront costs with doing this. If you look at an average catchment development, it's about $70,000. And we assume that improves habitat within a 2 mile radius of that catchment. So that's about 8,000 acres of habitat improved for a $70,000 investment. There's now drinking water available to wildlife within a 2 mile radius. That, if you pencil that out, that's just under $9 an acre to improve an acre of habitat through a water development. If you do, for example, grassland restoration, you're looking at a minimum, in most cases, of $150 an acre. So $150 an acre to do a watershed restoration type project minimum versus a little less than $9 an acre. So by focusing more on those type of projects, we expect to see an increase in the watershed acres improved and the amount of acres of grassland improved as we move forward, but most likely a decrease in the overall acres, because out of one water development project, traditionally we have done a lot of those and we've gotten 8,000 acres of habitat improved out of those projects. We also now report those separately in your metric report. We break out the number of acres improved by water, and we break out the number of acres improved by watershed restoration projects, so you can see those separately now moving forward. So just moving into some specific updates within the Landowner Relations and Habitat Enhancement Program, we have the Landowner Relations Sub-Program, and this is a program where we tend to focus on smaller projects. They tend to be foot-in-the-door projects with rancher cooperators, smaller projects, maybe just a drinker, solar development, pipeline, things like that. We also do grassland restoration, some of the bigger projects, but you can see in FY19 last year we did 41 projects for 750,000, and this year so far we've allocated 624,000 for 38 projects. The other sub-program you're well familiar with, the HPC Habitat Partnership Committee. This year we've allocated 3.2 million for 42 projects. And you can see how that compares to last year, where we allocated $2.9 million for 62 projects. And you can already see there are starting to be a shift of fewer projects, but bigger projects. And as you know, the conservation organizations that are member of the committee renewed their commitment to doing these larger projects this year and to allocate all available funding possible to the highest priority, the highest ranked projects each year. The other sub-program is the Habitat Enhancement Program, which uses the PR funds as its core funding, and then also tries to aggressively leverage other partner funding with those PR dollars. The first two projects, they tend to be bigger watershed scale projects. Those first two listed have had about $100,000 in funding directed to them each of the last 3 years. One's in northern Arizona that's in the final phase, Slate Mountain and Washed Up. And the second one there is in southern Arizona, Bonita Grassland, targeted to benefit pronghorn and mule deer. And it's in phase two, and you can see doing larger scale grassland restoration. The third one is one that's just starting. It's a GMU 18A project, and I'll talk more about that later, but that will involve two large grassland treatments in the GMU 18A. One thing we wanted to mention was the importance of the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, RCPP. That's a program administered by our partners at the Natural Resources Conservation Service using funding through the conservation title of the Federal Farm Bill. Basically, the way this program works is a lead partner, in this case, the department, identifies a project area, identifies the type of conservation practices to be implemented. In our case, it was grassland restoration, water development, wildlife-friendly fencing, and also the amount of money that the partners are willing to commit. And since 2015, the department has been the lead on these five projects identified on the map. And we have committed $6.65 million into those five footprints. And that $6.65 million is then matched by dollars by NRCS through the Federal Farm Bill for the exact same practices in those same footprints. The first two, the CAGS is the Central Arizona Grassland Conservation Strategy. And then that is, you can see on the map there, the pinkish color in the middle. And then we have the Restoring Native Grasslands, which is in the center to the right, the greenish color. Those two have been completed. There are three ongoing ones. NAGI is the Northern Arizona Grassland Initiative. And that is the right in the kind of almost the dead center, the light blue, the strip with, up in the northwest, and the SEAZ, the Southern Arizona RCPP. So we have those five ongoing. We also submitted a new proposal for a new RCPP. It's represented on this map by the red polygon, and it connects two previous RCPPs. The one highlighted in black is the Northern Arizona project, and the Central Arizona RCP project is in the blue. So if approved, this project will link the efforts that have been done between those two. And we committed $2.2 million into that footprint, which would then be matched by NRCS if approved. So the 18A project that I mentioned also happens to fall squarely in the middle of that last RCPP that's proposed. The goal in 18A is to spend $5 million over the next 5 years, including improving 36 miles of wildlife-friendly fence, doing 10 redevelopment of water catchments, and there's about 500,000 acres of historic grassland that has been identified that could use treatment within this area. So far, we have commitments, or will be utilizing funding from LRP and HE are our programs that I just mentioned, Landowner Relations Program, Habitat Enhancement. HPC is committed funding to this project. NRCS hopefully will if the RCPP project is approved. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Partners Program has already committed funding, and so has the DFFM, is Department of Forest and Fire Management. And lastly, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has already committed funding to this project. And hopefully we will see this list keep growing of partners that contribute to this landscape level project. And just to give you a flavor of the scale of the amount of funding that we get from partners, so far this year, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has contributed $215,000. ADEQ is Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. Over 100,000. RMEF, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, has contributed 170,000, and they have a proposal out now. We'll be pursuing more funding through them again this year. The Department of Forest and Fire Management has so far committed $100,000, and we are working with them. They have access to some U.S. Department of Agriculture funding, and we plan on pursuing $300,000 in partnership with them through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And lastly, the NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, we have two grants waiting. We're waiting for the results on. The first is VPA, Voluntary Public Access, about $2 million that we've requested that will enhance our landowner relations program. And then the RCPP project I mentioned, which is $2.2 million, so a little over $4 million in requests that we're waiting for from NRCS. Just a summary for the development branch. The map on the right shows all the developments across the state that they are responsible for maintaining. As of January 1st, they had completed redevelopment of 8 catchments and contributed over 64,000 acres to our total. And you can see the GMUs listed there where that work has taken place. And they are also, they wanted me to mention, they're also pursuing a standalone contract where they can just work directly with contractors to do this work rather than working through the Arizona Department of Administration, which they feel it can be done more efficiently and more cost effectively if we have our own contract. And then I mentioned we also report on that habitat projects, and this is just a highlight they wanted to share. They did the Bartlett Lake Christmas Tree Project last December and January, over 1,600 Christmas trees, 152 volunteer hours, 225 staff hours. They did trees. You can see where they're distributed on the map, and they have 13 new habitat sites for a total of 29 sites for improved fish habitat at Bartlett Lake. And so lastly, you mentioned, just wanted to show you the this represents all the partners we work with, a real nice mix of federal, state agencies, and then all the wildlife conservation organizations. And of course, need to mention what doesn't have a convenient logo is all of our private landowner and permittees that lease state trust and federal land that we are critical partners to all this as well. And with that, I can try to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate the presentation, and I just wanted to note Commissioner Guggenhauer and I got to go spend a little bit of time with Development Branch, and they was a great briefing and conversation with them. They're quality folks working in that branch, and always excited about the projects that. And this briefing is great because it really brings into focus how many different pieces are moving in this between HPC and everything else moving across the spectrum of impacting habitat. And I want to also give kudos for that. Targeting or concentration on watershed. I think that has been an issue for our state in lots of different contexts, and that work is more important now than it probably ever has been with the cycle of droughts that we've faced and maintaining also water for our wildlife. So thanks for the presentation, and again, I appreciated that little bit of time with the Development Branch as well. It was great.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah,
I echo that, Don. Thanks for the meeting yesterday with your staff to talk about these in a little more detail. You know, the thing for me is the biology and the science that goes into it is one thing, and you guys have a good handle on that, but the strategic thinking, to be already talking about what's after 18A kind of project and try to get the approvals and the federal partners in line and the private ranch owners all on board, That is great thinking. I appreciate that and the way you guys are managing this thing.
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Mr. Chairman, item 4 is federal lands planning update. Presenter is Clay Crowder, Habitat Chief.
Thank you, Director. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. Just get you up to speed on what's transpired in the last month or so, as well as kind of give you an update of some of the things that we didn't have a chance to provide in the packet and what we've seen on the national level. It's rare that I get to share successes with the commission, so I want to start right away with this one. This is something the department's been long involved with, started in, as you can see, 2018, and on the 5th of February, we were granted cooperating agency status for this Kaibab project, which allows us to be part of the ID team and really talking about what the the effects to wildlife habitat, just keying off what Don just talked about. Moving into a much meatier topic, and the commission's aware that the Tonto is the last forest in the state of Arizona that's updating their forest plan. And so just wanted to give you a summary overall. The comments will be submitted on the 12th. The department is already working with legal to ensure that they identify any inadequacies within NEPA as well as the process as we've participated this in the cooperating agency. So as I stated last month, and welcome Commissioner Geiler to this process, looking really in the impact to the department, the commission, with regards to wild and scenic river designations and those segments, particularly for native fish and habitat management. Part of what the department has spent considerable effort doing is looking at watershed management planning and how we want to manage for sport fish and native fish across these landscapes. If the forest is developing planning documents that are in conflict of the Department and Commission's goals, and we need to get that right into the gate. And then also impacts wildlife management with regards to wilderness areas or other areas of special designation. I think something I shared with the Commission last time is that this is the first time we've seen a segment called lakes and rivers for special management areas, and we want to make sure that doesn't affect our recreational anglers and some of those other goals that we have for some of those streams. So broken down into four alternatives, and even under alternative A, although this is what they're saying is a no action under the 1985 plan, there's actually would include two new research natural areas and four new management areas. The proposed action is this 43,000 acres of...
Mr. Chairman, tell us what is the new management areas? What's that mean?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, good question. So that would be an example of botanical areas or something with a special designation that could affect the management. The specific ones I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I could certainly follow up with you on what those are. But because they're anything that would change the management purposes for those. So right back to alternative B, this would be as an example, four new botanical areas, four new research natural areas, and one new management area. Alternative C, significant increase in what would be identified as proposed or recommended wilderness areas, and then same amount for botanical research, and then no new management areas. And finally, alternative D, no new wilderness, no new botanical, and no new research areas with one new management area.
What odds are you taking on D?
Zero, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis. Because they're focused so much on the proposed action of alternative B, and that's really where we're chewing into it, make sure that, I think as I shared last month, some of the language doesn't necessarily align with where the department and the Forest Service had reached with the Coconino and the Coronado on their planning efforts. And so this is an opportunity to reset that from an adaptive management purpose. We'll be meeting with stakeholders next week and kind of sharing a little bit more deeper dive with regards to our review of this, as well as finalizing the letter. With regards to the direction from the commission, a letter from the chair will also be sent to the forest outlining the concerns and any changes for multiple use and how that would affect the commission's authority or constituents. So stay tuned. This will be a draft. When it really boils down is when they release the final and what that final language would be included. So another success, I think we shared this with the commission not that long ago, but it was actually announced on January 30th, and this is a recreational shooting sports project where they're having five new areas around the Phoenix metropolitan area, actually starting construction spring of shortly, I guess 2020, so really soon. The department was involved in this process. I think there's no surprise to the commission that we do have experts in range management, which includes engineering designs on the best way to go about this. So this is kind of more of a national level, but I wanted to share this with the commission. This is something that's being pushed out of the Washington office of the BLM, and the focus is to look at areas to how can they improve recreational access for folks. This is an initiative under the Department of Interior, started with Secretary Zinke and really being rolled out with Barnhart. And the department's taken an opportunity to work with Don Larson, the Landowner Relations Group, looking at access and how those can be better improved for the forest, BLM, so we can communicate that to them. In summary, we'll be getting comments submitted by the 29th of this month, so next week. And then just, I think it's be a second time brought this to the commission, just in regards to this project that now we're working with reclamation on this, the Lake Powell pipeline. This is taking a pipeline from Lake Powell across into Utah, and so the department had requested cooperating agency status to reclamation on this, and at a staff level it was at least communicated that they probably would not be granting that, but in quotes, those decisions are made at a higher level. We do have some concerns from both a terrestrial aspect, which would be very short time frame, and how it could affect anything across the Kaibab, the mule deer migration movement up there, but then also on an aquatic level, anything that would be moving across these basins.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Is there any, because I understand, I mean, I do get why we would be very interested in cooperating status. Is there anything that the commission can do or whatever, in a letter from the chairman or whatever it is, to kind of upgrade this issue and this request?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, so our protocol right now, at least what I'm moving through, is a request that come from our regional supervisor. I think we'll elevate that within the department to reiterate the request. This is not a field office for reclamation that we've worked with before. Although we're able to provide data, part of the analysis, which is fine, but from a, it's important that we're at the table to ensure that they're analyzing those data properly. So we have a data agreement with them, but we also want to be a part of those conversations. So in short, we're going through our protocol to seek cooperating agency status. Whether the commission chooses to double down on our protocol and remind them of what that is. In my experience, sometimes working with the federal agencies, what cooperating agency status is unfortunately not well understood, and so it's an opportunity for us to remind them, and that's what we're doing in this instance.
Okay.
Kind of under the current administration, there's been a push to do some NEPA streamlining, and one of the ones that I think, again, feeding off of what Don had just shared, something that the forest has just put out was categorical exclusions and for habitat restoration, specifically benefiting mule deer, up to 4,500 acres. So in some instances, there's certainly things that are going to be beneficial to the department where we're able to, under the Forest Service handbook, pointing out to biologists, range cons, whomever within the forest of why we want to seek these opportunities to do work to benefit mule deer. But in other aspects, it's been challenging because how they notify the department or public under NEPA is now on this what they call SOPA, Scheduled Proposed Actions, which can be a Forest Service's website. All they have to do is put it up on the website, and now you know. And it doesn't necessarily allow the department to be, it's more reactive, less planned. Something that I think I just want to highlight the importance and appreciation for the regional programs that are, and the regional supervisors that are meeting with the forest supervisors to understand what's coming out so that there are less surprises. And we're strategically planning as best as we can for what's being done in the landscape. There are certain things, like as this is an example, that will benefit the department's efforts across the state. Unless there's any specific questions, this summarize concludes my briefing.
Mr. Chairman, Clay, appreciate the information. To follow up on Commissioner Davis's comment, I agree, when you look at the issues with the Lake Powell Pipeline Project, the type of issues that are being raised are things that the department has been trying to correct for a long time, specifically the quagga mussel issues. And so I'm talking about the timing. If there's something that comes up along the process and it doesn't fall into the format of commission meetings or something like that, I mean, immediately reach out. We'll be glad to get that letter or some type of request going forward with there. And I would gladly support that.
Yeah, I like that one. And you could, that could go to the Public Affairs and Marketing Subcommittee for off meeting review, because I, you know, again, I, whatever, if you think there's an appropriate time to double down on the, then I know we'd be happy to do it.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Gunnar, Commissioner Davis, I'll follow up with you, review internally and plan a course of action.
Mr. Chairman, item number five is Regulated Commerce and Wildlife. Presenters Mark Freeberg, Tucson Field Supervisor. I just want to add, I really appreciate Mark traveling all the way to give this presentation. This is the fourth in a series that you've received over the past 4 months regarding the seven tenets of the North American model. So we got three more to go after this one, but looking forward to seeing what we're looking forward to Mark's presentation.
Morning, Mark.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Thank you again. My name is Mark Freeberg, Field Supervisor for the Tucson sector. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to go over this tenet of the North American model. What I'd like to do is give a historical overview of wildlife commerce within North America throughout the past 200 years, and what laws and rules have been put in place to kind of counter that, the effects of the decimation of wildlife that's happened during that time. Just to give an overview of where we are in these tenets, the Arizona seven tenets of the North American model. Number three, regulated commerce and wildlife. That's the one I'll be speaking to today. The Lewis and Clark expedition, early 1800s, they described wildlife as so plentiful, buffalo horizon to horizon, and elk so numerous that they didn't even want to tell anyone about it because they didn't think people would believe them. But the idea is that there was wildlife throughout North America in a lot of numbers. And with man, as we started to develop the West and move toward utilizing wildlife, market hunting and commercial trapping, those are the two factors that really decimated the populations. Just selling wildlife with no rules and no regard for managing wildlife for generations to come. The other things here, urbanization, development, deforestation, those really had an effect, a long-term effect on wildlife, but market hunting and commercial trapping is what decimated the numbers in the short term. The 1800s were called the era of decimation. It was just, it's simple. I mean, before laws and regulations, wildlife were just viewed as inexhaustible in supply. We got buffalo there on the left, just rows and rows of deer on the right. And if you can see that picture on the right, the left portion of it, there's some bighorn sheep. I think there's three bighorn sheep. And you know, they were just going through wildlife and shooting it. Using it for meat, using it for anything they could to make money off of it. A couple photos of market hunting, waterfowl. They would take wildlife, anything they could, like I said, to the meat market. If you're not familiar with this photo on the right, this is a pile of buffalo skulls, and they used to grind those skulls up and use them for fertilizer. It's a testament to how fast wildlife was being decimated, and you can imagine how many buffalo there was there in that photo. And with this overutilization of wildlife came extinction. I mean, there was birds and wildlife species that we just don't have anymore because they were being overutilized. The heath hen, the passenger pigeon, Labrador duck and the great auk are four examples of species that we just don't have anymore. So, one of the first federal laws designed to protect wildlife and wildlife habitat in the late 1800s, the Yellowstone Protection Act. And there's a group of individuals here. Teddy Roosevelt, you know, he was huge in conservation of wildlife. Ulysses Grant, Grinnell, Hedges, and Lacey, which I'll talk about in a second too. These were individuals that were pretty important as far as starting federal laws and starting to protect wildlife. The 1870s, the late 1800s, is when people finally realized and states started to realize that we're not going to have wildlife anymore if we're going to keep on utilizing them like we have been for the past 50 to 60 years. 1871, first game laws in Montana aimed at uncontrolled take of buffalo. Some of these first state-sponsored game laws had to do with bag limits and how many animals people could actually take. 1871, every state in the eastern and mid-Atlantic regions had a fish commission, except Delaware. 1880, states had plenty of game laws, but enforcement was just tough. I mean, you're trying to change a generation of decimation and trying to change the mentality of folks that's all they knew is just to go take wildlife. The late 19th century, game laws focused on elimination of commercial take. Some states were passing laws against, commercial take, numbers, bag limits, methods of take that conform to fair chase. This idea of fair chase started to appear in the late 19th century. 1911, New York was the first state to prohibit the sale of big game or of game. And then a few years later, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act eliminates it for birds nationwide. So that was a huge step. Like I said, these game laws were a little bit unsuccessful at first because they were hard to enforce. So what happened here in Arizona specifically, a couple dates that were important in this time frame, 1881 with the very first three-member fish commission. A few years later, the commission received the authority to manage game. So we had some game laws about that time, the 1890s. 1897, Arizona institutes a buck-only law and bans the sale of game meat, which was huge. We're not shooting does, we're only shooting bucks, and we're not selling meat anymore. As a lot of these states were instituting their own laws, the Lacey Act was huge. 1900, it made it a federal offense to transport illegally taken wildlife across state lines. So something that might have been legal in one state that was illegal in another state, it tied a lot of the state's laws together, and that really helped in enforcing and protecting wildlife. This is our current law regarding selling wildlife. It's slightly paraphrased, but it's unlawful for a person to buy, sell, or expose for sale wildlife, except as permitted in this title. And we do have some things that are allowed to be sold right here. Heads, hides, and horns is what we allow here in the state. We do allow a market for wildlife. It's highly regulated, and these are the things that we allow. In fact, we have a sale every year at our assets auction at our department expo. So, and we do sell antlers. In summary, the idea is that Arizona does allow for a highly regulated wildlife commerce market. Guides and taxidermy licenses are examples of those highly regulated markets. People have to get guides licenses, and they have to turn in reports every year. And I think the take-home message is that as long as the take of wildlife remains legal, regulating markets on legally taken wildlife will not affect the overall natural resource. And that's what really happened in the early 1800s. So that's kind of the idea of this wildlife commerce and in wildlife. And I'll open it up now. That's just a brief overview of what's happened and where we are today. So any thoughts, questions, concerns?
Thanks for the presentation, Officer. And you said one of the most important things I think that you said in this, and it holds true for obviously most of the tenets of the North American model, but the idea that really it was as much a generational education of a generation following a generation that did not have that kind of, that kind of education about perpetuating wildlife into the future, and the education aspect over a long period of time was essential in moving to where we're at today, and then people's ability to accept regulated conduct in the field. And and you see it even today in the education programs that the department does, and the Conserve and Protect campaign, for example. It's an important notion to keep passing on to future generations, and to ensure that the next generation also has that same belief system in perpetuating our wildlife for future generations. And I love these presentations on the North American model, because each meeting there's such a wonderful reminder of why we're very fortunate in North America to have these tenets, to have this system in place, because much of the world doesn't. And what a great success story from the decimation aspect to where we sit today, and the improvement and the protection of endangered species and other things that we collectively as a society in North America have done. So it's a good reminder of what happens if you don't educate future generations, mm-hmm. and take that seriously, because it wouldn't be hard to go back to those days and these kinds of pictures if we didn't. So thanks a lot for the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, thank you.
Good job. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that brings us to item 6, which is a briefing on Lower San Pedro River Wildlife Area property and water rights. Our presenter is Jade Dickens, our Water Resources Program Manager. I believe Jade, yep, there she is at the Phoenix office. So.
Good morning. She can't hear us.
Yeah, we'll hold on one sec, Jake.
I think we're in plan two.
Yeah.
Mr.
Chairman, let's take a quick break, and then Jade, if you can hear us, we will come back to you after our break here in like 10 minutes.
Be fine, Mr. Thank you.
Okay.
It's
at 10 o'clock, I could drive it to wherever we are. Have you ever spent the night in Eloy? You don't want to have that happen.
That's your limit, huh? We just have the time certain, that's all. I didn't want to. Actually, I was having fun with my gavel, so.
No.
We might want to.
All of our tech.
Wait, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Line's on.
Hmm. So, Mr. Chairman, we'll try this again. Item 6, briefing on the Lower San Prater River wildlife property and water rights. Presenter is Jade Dickens, Water Resource Program Manager.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Director. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. Sorry for the technical difficulties this Friday morning, but we'll go ahead and get started. So I'm going to talk about the Lower San Pedro River wildlife area and a brief overview of the Gila River stream adjudication and how it impacts the wildlife area. Next slide. So you can kind of think of the Lower San Pedro River wildlife area as three different parcels. So we acquired almost 1,000 acres from ASARCO back in 2012 as settlement for habitat damage from activities at Ray Mine. We acquired another nearly 1,000 acres in a Triangle Bar, in the Triangle Bar Ranch acquisition. Both of those have water rights associated with them, and then we manage an additional over 36,000 acres of Arizona State Trust land. The primary purpose of this property is to manage for threatened and endangered species, and then also there's wonderful riparian and wetland habitat associated with this. Next slide. So here's a map just to give you kind of an overview of what we're looking at. So the orange are the parcels that were acquired during the ASARCO acquisition. The green are the Triangle Bar Ranch acquisition. And then all of the pink shading is the land that is managed for Arizona State Trust land. Next slide. And so to kind of zoom in, the water rights are really mostly tied to this geographical area. So you can see in the inset map, the red square kind of shows where on the overall property we're looking at. So when the commission acquired the ASARCO property, there were two water right filings associated with that, one for 273 acre feet per annum, that's the AFA, and then another one for 700 acre feet per year. And that's the orange, the larger of the two fields, kind of framed in orange. The green one is the Triangle Bar, and that's the smaller field. That one had 350 acre feet per year for irrigation. There was also uses for domestic, because there is a home there, and then also stock watering within the San Pedro River itself. The kind of farther to the west, there's another green square, and that's part of Putnam Spring. That one I'm not going to talk about too much, but that's 1,825 acre feet per annum. So next slide. So some of the current activities that we have going on this property, we have two cooperative agreements with G&H Cattle for grazing. They're also helping utilize our Triangle Bar water rights, and then they are acting as a sublessee for the estate trust land that the department manages. There are a lot of activities to support habitat protection and enhancement. There are activities that support in-lieu fee project priorities. And then we also manage this for recreational opportunities as well. Next slide. So now I'm going to briefly do a high-level overview of the Gila River stream adjudication, then how it is impacting this property. Next slide. So here's a map of the state. As you can see, all the yellow is area that is part of the Gila River adjudication. The green is a separate adjudication as part of the Little Colorado River. You can see the little red box is an approximate location of where the Lower San Pedro River wildlife area is. An adjudication is really a legal proceeding that determines the quantity of water and priority date for anybody with a statement of claim to the surface water. It began in 1974 and is still ongoing, and they're currently reviewing claims in the San Pedro subbasin. Next slide. So how does this tie to the Lower San Pedro River wildlife area? In October, the special master who is responsible for overseeing all of the adjudication cases activated three cases involving claims that the commission has. In December, department legal staff and technical staff met with attorneys from the Attorney General's office, the Natural Resources section. The department requested that they lead these cases for the department because they have more experience doing this, and we are closely working with them on that. On December 12th, there was a status hearing. It was requested that all three of the cases be consolidated into a single case so that it can all move together. It was ordered that Arizona Game and Fish needed to prepare abstracts, so those are summaries of all of the information, and then also maps depicting everything, and then distribute that information to the objectors, and then file a status report with the special master by January 24th. Next slide. So the cases, we have, like I mentioned, there were initially three of them. One was revolving around the Triangle Bar wells and water filings. So if you'll remember that map I showed, it was that green parcel. Another one was the Asarco fields with the wells and water filings, so the orange one. And then on the green field for the Triangle Bar, there's 1.5 acres that is on state trust land, so that was a separate case. So as I mentioned, those were all consolidated into one case to move forward together. And then I've listed the objectors to the filings on the right. There's 8 total. I'm not going to read them all. Next slide.
Mr. Chairman.
Currently, the status of this, in January, the abstracts and maps with proposed changes were circulated to.
Jay, can you hold on 1 second? We have a question from the commission.
Sure.
Good morning. I don't expect great detail, but can you tell on the objectors what is the general objection? What's the basis of the objections?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, so there are a variety of objections, and I believe we has the ability to speak on this in the executive session since this is ongoing litigation.
Okay.
I think executive session is a better place for that.
Okay, thank you.
So, like I mentioned, in January, the abstracts and maps proposed changes were circulated to the objectors, and obviously the ultimate goal is to achieve settlement. On January 24th, the status report was submitted to the special master, which summarized the progress that the Attorney General's office had made, and then also was still requesting an extension because we had not heard back from the objectors before we filed the final abstracts. On January 28th, the special master heard our request for an extension and set March 24th as the due date of that. In February, the attorneys have been having ongoing discussions with the objectors regarding what we have sent out in the proposed abstracts. Next slide. And finally, the next steps are that we are waiting to hear from all of the objectors regarding the proposed abstracts that we sent out. The objectors will either stipulate to the proposed abstracts or they may request additional changes. As I mentioned, agreement is the goal. So if we can achieve that, then we will submit the special master and they will be entered into the decree as settled. If we cannot achieve agreement, then the case will proceed to discovery and ultimately to trial. This is a very fluid, very ongoing, moving situation. So we are proposing to keep the commission apprised of activities related to the adjudication. At future meetings, we wanted to, this has been moving very quickly, so we wanted to summarize the all on it and provide a framework for future discussions. So at this time, there's no action to take, but I am happy to answer any questions that I may be able to answer now.
Any questions? If not, thank you very much for your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, thank you for your time.
Mr. Chairman, we have 10 minutes before our time certain. I do not know if that's enough for Julie to do hers. And if she, I assume she's from the doing it from the Phoenix office.
Do the litigation report.
You know, we could probably go to, is Tyler here? Yeah. Tyler, can you do yours in 10 minutes? Okay. Mr. Chairman, if you're okay, we'll go to agenda item number 10, which is a first read item, unless anybody tells me there's a reason we shouldn't do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 10 is utility permit agreement with Arizona Public Service Company. Again, this is a first read item. The commission may choose to take action on the first read item as necessary, or may direct the department to place it on a consent agenda at the next commission meeting. So let me introduce it. Utility permit agreement with Arizona Public Service Company. Presenter is Tyler Williford, Region 4 Habitat Specialist.
Good morning.
This is at the public or the Planet Ranch Conservation Wildlife Area. Short history: Planet Ranch. It was acquired in 2015 through a donation. As part of that donation, the commission took on the lease by the Lower Colorado River Multi-Species Conservation Program for the western third of the wildlife area. This permit agreement would be in support of their project for some ponds that they're constructing on the property. So the department proposes to enter into a utility license agreement with the Arizona Public Service Company for the purpose of accessing, constructing, and maintaining underground electric power lines, appurtenances, and electrical services at the Planet Ranch Conservation Wildlife Area in La Paz County. The line installation will provide electrical services to well pumps intended to fill and maintain the ponds currently being constructed on the area leased to the MSCP. And then if, unless you have any questions, I have a recommendation for you.
Proceed with the recommendation.
The department recommends that the commission direct the department to place this item on the consent agenda at the next regular commission meeting.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman. Is there any reason, I think Commissioner Kurska is saying I am, but would there be any reason not to go ahead and okay this now as opposed to setting it on?
Well, I do have some questions related to Planet Ranch, and so I'm...
Okay, no, I don't have a motion.
Please proceed. Yeah.
Well, the question is not really direct. I just wanted to check in on Planet Ranch. The road's open, the gate's open, or do we have any things going on there that I know we had previous issues early on? Have those all been resolved? Or
Commissioner Davis, members of the commission, yes, the road is open, the gate is open. At this time, they are doing construction currently, but the road is open as far as I know.
Okay. So all is good in the world there right now?
As good as it could be, yes.
Okay. I'm comfortable just having it stay on
the consent agreement agenda.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions?
So can I make a motion?
I think we've agreed to leave it on the consent agenda.
Oh, okay. I was trying to get it off the consent agenda and have it acted on now, but I'm in no hurry. We can wait another month.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that brings us to our time certain, which we still have a few minutes to go. So I don't think there's anything else unless we have a commissioner. There's like any commissioner would like to do some commission reports, but we're really in no rush here, and all the other items will take more than 5 minutes, I believe. I've just been notified that we could start our time certain at 10 right now, so I'll turn it over to Gene. Item 8 is hearings on license revocations for violations of game and fish codes and civil assessments for the illegal taking and possession of wildlife. Presenter is Gene Elms, Law Enforcement Branch Chief.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, good morning. The Department would like the record to show that each of the cases this Commission may consider to have been reviewed. It has been determined that cases meet the criteria established in Arizona Revised Statute 15714, 17238, 17314, 17340, 17362, and/or 17363 for Commission action. The record should reflect that the Commission and the respondents have been provided with copies of original court dockets and case reports prepared by the officers, along with copies of other pertinent material in each of these cases. All these exhibits may be considered by the Commission in order to make a final determination in each of these cases. Please note that each individual has been legally noticed for today's hearing. I'll read the names of the individuals who are noticed for today's hearing. If you are present, could you please verbally indicate as such for the record? Donald Roscoff. Francisco Castillo Espinoza. Oscar Garcia Sevilla. Mr. Sevilla is present. David Castillo Garciano. Francisco Castillo. Johnny Kay. Present. Mr. Kay is present. Eugene Parson. Present. Eugene Parson is present. Gerald Lavamtipa. James Ellis. The civil assessment process, not intended to be punitive, is a process allowing the commission to recover financial damages and compensate the state for any lost wildlife. Hunter education requirements is imposed as a remedial measure to increase knowledge and and prevent future violations, and not as punishment. The department is ready to present these cases for possible revocation under civil action and have the commission take jurisdiction.
So I make a motion that we take jurisdiction.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0.
Mr. Chair, since Mr. Sevilla needs a translator, I'll make a recommendation that we do Johnny Kay and Parsons first.
Okay.
These cases, these two individuals are involved in the same incident, and their case summaries are the same. So if it would like the commission, I can introduce both cases, and perhaps we have one discussion and then make the motions after that, if that's okay with you.
Okay with me. That's fine.
Okay. The first case is docket number 2020-0015, the name of Johnny Kay, 4703 North Highway 188 in Globe, Arizona, 85501. Conviction summary charge, count A, knowingly waste edible portions of a bull elk. Count B, take wrong sex, one bull elk with an antlerless tag. The courts of Clifton Morenci Justice Court, plead both counts are guilty. Court findings are the same. Sentenced to pay a fine of $545 on July 17, 2019. Actions to be considered: revocation license, take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340, require completion hunter education course pursuant to ARS 17245, civil damages of no less than $6,394.03 for loss of one bull elk pursuant to ARS 17314. Case summary: on October 19, 2018, in Game Management 27, Officer Sam Williams received the report of a hunter regarding a dead bull elk that had been found and shot and left to waste during an antlerless elk hunt. Upon arriving at the scene, Officer Williams located a second bull elk that had also been shot and left to waste. Officer Williams is able to recover ballistic evidence from the scene based on the the vehicle and occupant descriptions provided by the reporting party. Officer Williams is able to identify Johnny Kay and Eugene Parsons as persons of interest. On January 22, 2019, Officer Williams and Officer James Chandler interviewed Johnny Kay and Globe, and questioned about the incident. Kay was not immediately truthful in his response. After continued questioning, Kay eventually admitted that both he and Parsons had shot into a herd of elk multiple times near the road. That they had located a dead bull elk near the side of the road, and that they had agreed to leave the area and not tell anyone about the violation. Next case, docket number 2020-0016, the name of Eugene Parsons. He also prefers to be referred to as Dusty. Address of 1823 West Sheldon Way, Phoenix, Arizona, 85201. conviction summary, charge count A, knowingly waste edible portion of bull elk, take count B is take wrong sex with an antlerless tag. The court's the Clifton Morenci Justice Court. Plea on counts A and B are guilty. Court findings are the same. Sentenced to pay a fine of $545 on July 19, 2019. Actions to be considered: revocation of license, take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340, require completion on our education course pursuant to ARS 17245, civil damage no less than $6,394.03 for the loss of one bull elk pursuant to ARS 17314. The case summary is the same as the previous. Mr. Parsons and Mr. K are present. The case officers are available by video from Region 1. You have any questions for me?
We'd like to hear from Mr. K if he'd like to speak. Mr. K, limit your discussion to about 3 minutes, if you would, please. Thank you. Anything you'd like to say to us about these?
Well, I'd just like to apologize for having to appear before the board here and say that I'm very ashamed of what happened. I made a terrible decision. And I'm here to face my consequences. I would like to express that I've hunted all my life in Arizona and never before made such a stupid mistake. I don't know what came over me, but I'm ashamed of it, and I wish I could at least hold on to my fishing license. I understand if you want to take my hunting license for life, but again, I just apologize.
Any questions from Commissioner David?
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Is that it?
That's it.
Thank
you. Should we hear the officer? Let's hear the officer.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend that maybe we hear from Mr. Parsons and then talk to the officer.
Let's do that then. Mr. Parsons, if you'd like to speak, please come forward. Limit your time in less than 3 minutes, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, again, like Johnny said, I'm ashamed to be standing in front of you. I've hunted my entire life in Arizona. Next year would have been my pioneer license, and it doesn't look like that'll happen. But a couple of things that what we did, we panicked. I've never done anything like that. I've never think about it. It was the wrong thing. We did the wrong thing. But since we've, during this whole process, so we've done the right thing. You know, we never knew about the second elk. We never saw a second elk. I'm not debating. They, you know, the officers Williams, the first time we heard about it was when they questioned us. But again, that's probably immaterial because we still made a poor decision when we drove away. You know, we didn't mean, we were cow hunting. And in my 50 years, I've never got buck fever, but apparently that day I did, you know, and I've thought about it since. I spent some time in the hospital with it. I've got an advanced form of congestive heart failure. And like Johnny said, I fully expect my license to take away, and if they need to take it away for life, I can understand that. But I also, and my other passions is fishing, and my violation was not in my fishing license. I volunteer during the winters at a camp in Roosevelt, Arizona. I've done that for 4 years. I mean, I'll survive without it, but I'm hope because if the case of 5 year suspension of my license, especially my fish, is almost a death penalty for me, quite honestly. And I ask you to consider that. There was a time I worked with Arizona Game and Fisher. I was the state president for National Wild Turkey Federation, and we did a lot of good things during that time. And now, I can't express more that I'm ashamed. I truly wish I wasn't here. But we're here to accept our responsibility. And hopefully the commission can see that portion of it. And the only clemency I ask is, please, don't take my fishing license. Yeah, willing to ask any questions you have.
Thank you for coming. I don't have any questions. Mr. Chair.
Commissioners
may.
So to both you gentlemen, we're going to talk to the officer. But sure. It's encouraging. I mean, mistakes get made. This was an accident, lapse of judgment. So we appreciate the fact that you come here willing to talk to us and take responsibility for those actions. We don't get that in all the cases that we have. So we're going to hear from the officer, but at least on you guys making the trip here and the talks that you gave, we appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Both have a seat, and we're going to hear from the officer now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, officer.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. You want to tell us what you determined as part of your investigation?
So our initial contact was with Mr. Gay. He was not entirely truthful to begin with. However, as we continued to question him, he was forthright and frank with his with the situation. When we followed up with Mr. Parsons, he was immediately cooperative. Both gentlemen were extremely respectful and cooperative throughout the process, and they expressed remorse after they confessed.
Any questions for the officer?
None. But thank you, officer, for the hard work.
Thank you, officer.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Mr. Odenkirk. We need to do these as two separate motions.
Yes.
I assume so. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion.
Please proceed.
I move that the license and our license privileges of Johnny P.K. Is that one you want me to do at first? Yeah. Johnny P.K. to hunt in the state of Arizona, to hunt and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and he be denied another for a period of 2 years. That the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing and that it be revoked as of the date of the order in this case is signed by the director. I want to add into here that, I'll do it in a minute, that he be required to complete the hunter education course and provide proof to the department for applying for any other license to hunt in this state. That the department be directed to collect civil damages or to bring civil action against Johnny P.K. to collect the amount of $6,394.03 for the loss of one bull elk, and upon completion of paying the civil assessment, he would be able to obtain a fishing license. And I further move that the director, as secretary of the commission, be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to this motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? I'm opposed, so the vote is 4-1 in favor.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I make the second motion.
Please.
I move that the license or license privileges of Eugene L. Parsons to hunt and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and he be denied another period of 2 years. That the current license be suspended at the day of this hearing and that it be revoked as the date the order in this case is signed by the director. That he be required to complete the hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in this state. That the department be directed to collect civil damages or to bring civil action against Eugene L. Parsons to collect the amount of $6,394.03 for the loss of one bull elk, and that upon completion of paying the civil assessment, he would be able to obtain a fishing license. And I further move that the director, as secretary to the commission, be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to this motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
I'm opposed. It carries 4-1. Thank you.
All in favor?
Members of the commission?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed is 1 to me.
Members of the commission? I want to recommend a modification to those motions. Because there was not an affirmative statement with regard to the revocation of the fishing license, I would recommend a modification that the fishing license privileges be suspended or revoked until such time as the civil assessment is paid.
Mr. Chairman, then I'll amend my motion on Mr. K. to have suspension, revocation of the fishing license until the assessment is paid.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? 5-0, that carries.
Mr. Chairman, I would amend a motion on Mr. Eugene L. Parsons to have to revoke his fishing license as well until the civil assessment of $6,394.03 is paid.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm opposed. It will be 4-1. It carries.
Okay, Mr. Chair, the next case in order of presence is Oscar Garcia Sevilla, docket number 2020-0009, address of 5436 West Wolf Street, Phoenix, Arizona, 85031. Conviction summary, charge count A, take 6x5 and 5x6 bull elk without a valid tag. Count B, possess unlawfully taken, 6x6 and 6x5 bull elk. Count C, possess 6x5 and 5x6 bull elk without valid tag attached. Count D, possess and transport bull elk antlers without evidence of legality. Count E, take 6x6, 6x5 bull elk during closed season. The court's the Payson Justice Court. Plea is guilty on all counts. The court accepted the plea, issued a combined fine of $1,520 on July 9, 2019. Actions to be considered: revocation license, take BioLi pursuant to ARS 17340, require completion of an education course pursuant to ARS 17245, civil damages no less than $12,788.06 for loss of two bull elk pursuant to ARS 17314. Case summary: on April 29, 2018, Officer James Chandler began an investigation into an illegal hunting activities of the following individuals: David Castillo Garciano, Francisco Javier Castillo, Francisco Javier Castillo Espinoza, and Oscar Garcia Sevilla. While searching for the hunting videos, Officer Chandler discovered David Castillo Garciano open public record YouTube account containing videos of the take of wildlife in Arizona, one particular of a two bull elk. Officer Chandler's investigation provided the following facts. On or about November 1st, 2017, foreign defendants killed two bull elk near Deer Creek in Gila County. The defendants did not have a valid tag for 2017. The two bull elk were killed, one a 5x6 and the other a 6x6 bull elk, had their antlers removed by saw, and they were taken by the defendants. No other parts of the elk were taken from the field. The elk were killed during a closed season in Game Management 22 during 2017. After matching terrain in the video, Department Officers Wagner, Chandler, and Anthony located the kill site on a ridgeline inside the Mazatal Wilderness between the north and south forks of Deer Creek in February 17, 2019. Multiple items of evidence, including the remains of two bull elk, were located, and ballistic evidence was recovered from the scene. Four search warrants were served at the defendant's home on April 13, 2019. The antlers from the 6x6 bull elk were recovered from Francisco Javier Castillo Espinoza's residence, and the other set of 6x5 elk was recovered from Francisco Javier Castillo's residence. Corresponding cases: Francisco Castillo Espinoza, docket number 2020-0008, David Castillo Garciano, 2020-0010, Francisco Castillo, 2020-0012. Disposition of the wildlife: the officer seized the 6x5 and 5x6 bull elk during the search warrant, and they're being held in evidence. Time spent 180 hours. Mr. Oscar Garcia Sevilla is present. He will be speaking to you through an interpreter. And Officer Robledo, the case officer, is available by video in Region 1. You have any questions for me?
No, Gene. I think we'd like to hear from Mr. Sevilla.
Hola. me disculpo de lo que hice y pues sí, este, a mí me gusta la la conservación de los animales y pues es una, les pido una disculpa de todo lo que hice.
¿Es todo lo que quieres?
No, este, pues me gustaría que no me quitaran la licencia.
¿Para cazar?
Ajá. Sí.
Ok, ahora voy a hablar aquí. Sí, se puede pedir.
Good morning, Chairman, Mr. and Commissioners. Mr. Garcia Sevilla mentioned to me that he feels very remorseful and ashamed for what he did, and that that's really all he had to say, and he hopes that you guys will not take away his license from him, his hunting fishing license.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Can you ask Mr. Sevilla, was he the one that shot the elk?
El comisionado pregunta si usted fue el que disparó al alce.
Fuimos todos.
¿Todos? Mm-hmm. ¿Todos le dispararon?
Sí.
He said that everyone involved in the case shot at the elk.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? I'd like to hear from the officer.
Mr. Chair, it's Officer Chandler.
Good morning, Officer Chandler. Can you hear us?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I can hear you.
Would you give us the facts as you understood them after you interviewed the defendant?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Did you have an opportunity to interview Mr. Sevilla?
I did not personally interview Mr. Sevilla. Mr. Sevilla was gone at the time of our service of search warrants, but we did make contact with him by phone, and were able to interview him by phone, Peter.
And was he truthful as to the events that took place?
Mr. Sevilla, Garcia Sevilla was truthful about the events according to the evidence that we recovered. He was honest in taking responsibility and also letting us know that the other individuals were also involved in the killing of these two bull elk.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
Officer Chandler, the question about shooting, Mr. Garcia Sever told us that everybody shot at the animals. Is that accurate on the description of the evidence that you found?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, that is accurate. That's accurate also with the evidence recovered at the scene as well. It is indicative that four rifles and at least one pistol were used in killing those two bull elk.
Okay. And how about from a cooperation standpoint, from the people you spoke with, were they straight honest with you and cooperative, or did they resist?
Two of the other individuals involved, Francisco Castillo and David Castillo Graciano, chose not to speak with us. They chose to plead the fifth. Mr. Francisco Castillo Espinosa did give us time and talk to us in an interview. He was not truthful about his participation in this. He was not truthful about the events that day, no.
Okay, and there seemed like there was a lot of discussion about the actual location. At one point it was over by Heber, and there was a lot of back and forth about where this actually happened. Was that intentional, or do you think that was just miscommunication?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I believe that that was intentional. As our interviews and evidence progressed on that day that we did the search warrants, it did become obvious that they were familiar, had hunted in that portion of Unit 22 before, and they knew where they were in that unit. And there had been a story put forth early on in the interviews that they did hold a tag, an elk tag, for Unit 5B. And after doing more research on that, it was determined that Mr. Garcia Sevilla had been drawn for a Unit 5B pull-up tag in 2016. None of these individuals had pull-up tags in 2017 when this occurred.
Thank you, Officer Chandler, and good work on this report.
Commissioner Davis?
Thank you, Officer.
Thank you.
Yeah, the excellent work. No, it was complicated and complex. One other, just as a reminder, there were no valid tags, and we were not in a season when these elk were taken in that unit, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, that is correct. This was during a closed season, and none of the four subjects involved held any valid elk tags for that year.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Officer? Go ahead, Commissioner.
Officer, let me see if I understand this correctly. Mr. Sevilla, was he the first person you contacted or was contacted? Let me put it this way.
Mr. Chairman,
was he the first person?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Mr. Garcia Sevilla was not home the day that we conducted search warrants and did interviews. He was gone and was not spoken to that day except by telephone to let him know that we had served a warrant at his house. The other three subjects were there and were interviewed the day of the warrants.
Officer, when you contacted Mr. Sevilla, did he upfront say that's what happened, or indicated what happened on that, or was he a little hesitant to give you that information at the first? How was his cooperation compared to the other three people?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Mr. Garcia Sevilla was cooperative in that he did meet with officers from the department at our headquarters office there in Phoenix later when he was able to. He brought his daughter to help to interpret on that interview as well. So it appeared I was not there for that interview, but from the reports and what I was told later, that he was cooperative during that interview and did admit to his what he did that day in the shooting of these two bull elk, and gave us information that the other three individuals had also participated in killing those elk.
Officer, and did the other three deny that during the first initial interview?
Mr. Commissioner, I could not hear that question. I'm sorry. Can you repeat?
I'm trying to establish the cooperation between Mr. Sevilla and the other three people who were involved in this. And I'm trying to figure out in my mind, was this gentleman cooperative, gave you the names of the other people and cooperated in you, as opposed to the other people who initially denied it? And I'm assuming from what you said that the gentleman here did not deny it. And I'm just trying to get a flavor for that. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I understand your question. And the answer to that would be that Mr. Garcia Sevilla was the only one of the three that did take responsibility for what he did. There was some going back and forth as to what he believed was legal at the time, but it did become apparent throughout the interview and in the going through those reports that he understood that what he did was illegal, but he was cooperative and took responsibility for it.
Thank you, Officer.
Commissioner Davis?
I guess I want to kind of remind the commission, though, at the heart of this case, we're dealing with the take of elk without tags, not in season, is at the very base of this. So it's somewhat different than somebody identifying or a species with it, having a legitimate tag or whatever it is. This is a straight up out of season, no license or no tag in a closed unit.
Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman,
I'm sorry, Commissioner Brakeley.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I move that the license privileges of Dr. Garcia Sevilla to hunt or fish, hunt, trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and he be denied another for a period of 5 years. That the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing and that it is revoked as of the date of the order in this case as signed by the director. That he be required to complete the hunting education course, provide proof to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in this state. That the department be directed to collect civil damages or to bring civil action against Oscar Garcia Cervea to collect the shared amount of $12,788.06 for the loss of two bull elks. I further move that the director, as secretary to the commission, be directed to sign and issue a finding of facts, conclusion of law, and that an order in this matter pursuant to this motion. Thank you.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0.
Mr. Chair, we have no other people present, so since we've introduced this case and there's three others involved, we'll just go ahead and I'll introduce those remaining individuals related to this case. So the next one is docket number 2020-0008, name of Francisco Javier Castillo Espinoza, 1145 North 94th Street, Mesa, Arizona, 85207. Conviction summary. The charges are identical to the previous. It's a court, it's the Payson Justice Court. Plea is guilty on all counts. Court accepted the fee. Plea agreement, combined fine of $2,270 on July 9, 2019. Actions to be considered, revocation of license, take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340. Require completion hunter education course pursuant to ARS 17245. Civil damage no less than $12,788.06 for loss of two bull elk pursuant to ARS 17314. The case summary is identical as the previous. Would you like me to read it?
Yes, please.
Okay.
No, let's just make a motion.
Commissioner Guiley, you want to
Mr. defer? Chairman, I move that the license and or license privileges of Francisco J. Castillo Espinoza to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and that it be denied for a period of 5 years. That the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing and that it be revoked as of the date of the order in this case as signed by the director. That it be required to complete a hunter education course, provide proof of to the department before applying for another license in this state. That the department be directed to collect civil damages and to bring civil action against Francisco J. Castillo Espinoza to collect the shared amount of $12,788.06 for the loss of two bull elk. And I further move the director, as secretary of the commission, be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to the motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Anyone opposed? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carries 5-0.
Mr. Chair, the next case is docket number 2020-0010, name of David Castillo Graciano, 810 East Lamont Street, Santan Valley, Arizona, 85140. The conviction summary, the charges are identical as the previous. The court's the Payson Justice Court. Plea is guilty on all counts. Court accepted the plea. Sentenced to combined fine of $1,175 on July 9, 2019. Actions to be considered, revocation license, take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340. Require completion hunter education course pursuant to ARS 17245. Shared civil damage no less than $12,788.06 for loss of two bull elk pursuant to ARS 17314. The case summary is identical to the previous. Would you like me to read it?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Proceed.
I move that the license or license privileges of David Castillo Graciano to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and he be denied another for a period of 5 years. That the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing and that it be revoked as of the date the order in this case is signed up by the director. that he be required to complete a hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in the state. That the department be directed to collect civil damages or bring civil action against David Castillo Graciano to collect a shared amount of $12,788.06 for the loss of two bull elk. And I further move that the director or secretary to the commission be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order in this matter pursuant to this motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0.
Mr. Chair, next case is docket number 2020-0012. Name of Francisco Castillo, 9225 East Main Street, Lot 63, Mesa, Arizona, 85207. Conviction summary charges identical to the previous. The court's Pace and Justice Court. Plea on all counts were guilty. Court findings accepted the plea. Sentenced to a fine of $1,175 on July 9, 2019. Actions to be considered. Revocation license pursuant to ARS 17340. Require completion under education course pursuant to ARS 17245. Shared civil damages of no less than $12,788.06 for loss of two bull elk pursuant to ARS 17314. Case summary, would you like me to read that? Is identical.
No, I don't believe you have to. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Proceed, please.
I move that the license or license privileges of Francisco J. Castillo to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and he be denied another for a period of 5 years. That the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing and that it be revoked as of the date the order in this case is signed by the director. That he be required to complete a hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in the state. That the department be directed to collect civil damages or bring civil action against Francisco J. Castillo to collect a shared amount of $12,788.06 for the loss of two bull elk. And I further move that the director or secretary to the commission be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order in this matter pursuant to the motion.
Is there a second?
Second. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to mention in this case, I mean, this is one of those very significant cases. You have a combination of events that are something you never want to, you know, as a commissioner, obviously, you never want to see in these situations where you have people that had did not have a license, a tag, were not in season, the horns are taken, antlers are taken, the meat is wasted, not attempted to be used, and then posted on social media. So I'm very happy that the commission took a very strong position about that kind of completely unacceptable activity.
Thank you, Commissioner Davis. Anyone else? Thank you.
Look at that. Forgot to turn on my mic. I know some guys that do that once in a while. Next case is docket number 2019-0016. Name of Donald Roscoff, P.O. Box 1171, Chino Valley, Arizona, 86323. Conviction summary, citation 15466, 15468, 19361, 19363. Obtained license by fraud for the years of 2014, 2016, 2017, 2018. Count B, citation 15466, 15468. 19361, obtained resident elk tag by frauds for the years of 2014, 2016, and 2018. count B, obtained resident should be elk tag by fraud for the year of 2018. Count C, citation 15468 and 19361, obtained resident antelope tag by fraud in 2017. Citation 19363, obtained resident elk tag by fraud in 2018. The court's Desert Ridge Justice Court plea is guilty on all counts. The court accepted the plea, sentenced to pay a fine of $800 in order to pay restitution of $1,766 to the department. Date of conviction is July 10, 2019. Actions to be considered: revocation of license, take wildlife pursuant to ARS 17340, require completion under education course pursuant to ARS 17245. Would you like me to read the case summary? Mr. Roscoff is not present.
You want to read the case summary? We have an officer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's Officer Reagan in Region 2.
Morning, Officer. How are you?
Good, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission.
Could you give us your what the facts as you know them in this matter?
Basically, review of the case, Mr. Roscoff, Donald Roscoff, was putting in his brother, Mikey Roscoff, as a resident of Arizona, while his brother Mikey was a non-resident of Arizona. Essentially, he did this until he drew a Unit 9 elk tag. That's when we received some information of the residency fraud. Upon contacting Donald in the field, he knew his brother was not a resident of Arizona. When we contacted Mikey Roscoff, he did not know that he had an elk tag or that he was being put in for any hunts in Arizona since 2009. Once faced with the facts, originally, Donald Roscoff was not forthcoming, but after faced with the facts, he cooperated throughout the rest of the investigation.
Any questions with the officer?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Davis?
Thank you, officer. So basically, in reading your report, we're looking at a situation of the individual knows that they're committing fraud in putting somebody in as a resident for the purposes of building bonus points. Is that
correct?
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, and to follow up on that, officer, in fact, they used those advantage and bonus points to get tags.
Commissioner Gudenhauer, that is correct. He was using his brother's bonus points to increase his odds of drawing a permit in Arizona.
And they actually got those permits?
Correct. They indeed drew a Unit 9 early archery bull tag.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
please.
Since all of these people are known to me and I went to high school with the father and I know all the kids, I'll recuse at this time in any further discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Proceed, please.
I move that the license or license privileges of Donald Roscoff to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked and he be denied another for a period of 5 years, that the current license be suspended as of the date of this hearing and it be revoked as of the date the order in this case assigned by the director, that he be required to complete a hunter education course to provide proofs to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in the state. And I further move that the director or secretary to the commission be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order in this matter pursuant to the motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 4-0, and we acknowledge the non-vote from the new commissioner.
Mr. Chair, next case is docket number 2019-0036, in the name of Gerald Lomaventipa, P.O. Box 66, 2nd Mesa, Arizona, 86043. So I should mention that the commission heard this case last month. Mr. Lomaventipa and Haniwamtua were both noticed, and the commission made took action against both of these individuals. When we sent them the finding of facts, the commission chose to suspend their license for 3 years and offered a hunter ed class as a requirement as well. When we sent them the finding of facts, Mr. Lovemtima called us and said, hey, my notice said for February. And so that was clearly our error. We noticed both of them, but his said February instead of January. So we told him we would place him on the February agenda because he missed that opportunity. I did talk to him on the phone. He said he would like to show up and be present. And so we put him back on the agenda for February, which he is not here. So the facts of the case have not changed. The commission has a standing motion already in this matter for 3 years in hunter education. requirement, so I'm not sure we need to rehear this unless you want to modify your previous decision.
Let's get a legal advice on this one.
Members of the Commission, I would recommend a motion to reaffirm your prior decision.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Commissioner Davis?
I'll make a motion to reaffirm that the license and our license privileges of Gerald, and how do you say the gentleman's name?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Davis, I would go with Lama Ventima.
Okay, Gerald. Privileges of Gerald Lama Ventima to hunt, fish, and trap in the state of Arizona be revoked, and he be denied another for a period of 3 years. That the current license be suspended at the date of this hearing, and it be revoked as of the date of the order in this case was signed by the director. That he be required to complete the hunter education course and provide proof to the department before applying for any other license to hunt in the state. And I further move that the director or secretary of the commission be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order in this matter pursuant to this motion.
Second. Here one second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries 5-0.
Mr. Chair, the next case is docket number 2018-0045, name of James Robert Ellis, 4058 East Delta Circle, Mesa, Arizona, 85206. Conviction summary, 4 counts, take turkey with an unlawful method. The court is the Office of Administrative Hearing. Plea on all counts are not guilty. Office of Administrative Hearing finds him to be responsible. There was no fine in the case. Date of conviction, January 28, 2020. Actions to be considered by the commission. Civil damages no less than $8,715.44 for the loss of 4 turkeys pursuant to ARS 17314. This is a unique case and perhaps the first one I can recall that we sent to the Office of Administrative Hearing in this for a revocation. And in this case, as you can see from the case summary on the corresponding cases, Mr. Ellis has been before the commission at 2 other occasions and been civilly assessed and revoked on both of those occasions. However, the charges in this case related to the turkeys were dismissed through the court, and because they were dismissed, we couldn't ask the commission for financial damages or compensation to the state because there was no finding of responsibility. So in order to ensure he was responsible, Linda and the case officer took this case to the Office of Administrative Hearing. We do have a video of Mr. Ellis and these acts, and this is among the things that Linda used at the Office of Administrative Hearing. The issue we had was there's plenty of video of Mr. Ellis driving his razor and chasing and shooting at animals, but when in the matter of the turkeys, his face was not in the video of the razor. However, Linda was able to prove or show to the court that he was in fact the driver using other videos in the sequence, but that is why there was no conviction in the court on those charges. So is that available? Mr. Chair. That is our champion there, Mr. Ellis. We have many videos of this collection, but this gives you an idea of the individual you're dealing with here in this case. So the case summary is identical to the previous two cases before the commission. I can read it if you would like. Mr. Ellis has paid one of the civil assessments previously provided by the commission or directed from the commission, but he has not paid the last one. So he was noticed legally for the hearing. His notice was returned unaccepted. We also noticed him through regular mail as well. That does not require a signature. Do you have any questions for me?
Do you have any questions for Dean?
I'd just make a comment that just the fact that driving the razor across the force like that is an illegal act in itself, right?
Absolutely. There's any number of Title 13 or federal violations and state violations that he could have been found guilty of, for sure.
Mr. Chair, I have a motion.
Proceed.
I move that the department be directed to collect civil damages or to bring civil action against James R. Ellis to collect the amount of $8,715.44 for the loss of four turkeys. And I further move that the director or secretary to the commission be directed to sign and issue a finding of fact, conclusion of law, and an order to, in this matter pursuant to this motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0.
I do have one question for Gene on this, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Gene, so obviously in 16, we revoked his license privileges for 5 years, and then we met him again on December 17th, and we revoked for 5 years. Why didn't we go to 10? Was it because it was on the same? It was the same, trip from hell that he was on?
Mr. Chair, the second revocation was for the Badger, which you saw in that video
right
there. So it wasn't a big game. I mean, a deer or an elk. So okay, we couldn't go to 10.
Okay. I couldn't remember what.
Yeah. And because this is an office of the administrative hearing finding, we can't take a revocation action in this case. It's only
right,
civil.
And the hunter education course has also not been fulfilled per your notes.
That's correct.
So we still have an outstanding, we have a number of years left. 1 year left roughly on the revocation. We have a hunter education course that has to be completed, and we have two further civil assessments that need to be paid.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Davis, and perhaps for Mr. Geiler, the way this works is sometimes the commission does see people for, especially in larger cases, you may see them multiple times. If the animal is a big game animal, we can get to 10 years in lifetime with subsequent cases before the commission. In this case, we were dealing with some deer and ultimately a badger. So both of those recommendations from the commission were for 5 years. The last one, so we had one that started in 2016 for 5 years, and we had one that started in 2018 for 5 years. And so those run concurrently. So essentially his 5 years started over in 2018, even though it's running at the same time as 2016. So it automatically starts over at the last motion from the commission.
Anybody else have any questions for Gene?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to acknowledge Linda for her efforts in seeing this through, too. This one that takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, but whenever you see video like that, you understand your dedication. So thank you.
Yes, second that. Thank you, Gene.
Mr. Chair, that concludes agenda item 8.
Mr. Chairman, do you guys need a break?
Are you here?
Okay, and then we will go back to item 7, which we haven't presented to Phoenix, so we'll get them get up and running. Mr. Chairman, we are going back to item 7, which is the threatened endangered wildlife briefing. Presenters Julie Carter, statewide native aquatics program manager. Julie's going to be joining us from Phoenix. There she is.
Good
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I am happy to talk with you about a program that's really exciting. And can I have the first slide, please? Next slide. Next slide, please.
They're working on it.
That aren't familiar with camp, I'll start with what the camp is. It is our department's sport fish stocking, conservation, and mitigation program that was developed between 2008 and 2011 in conjunction with the Fish and Wildlife Service to reduce and offset impacts of our sport fish stocking program on native species over a 10-year end next July. Implementing the camp ensures our ability to stock sport fish and contributes to the conservation and recovery of native aquatic species. Next slide, please. So how was the camp developed? Our sport fish stocking program at the time was operated a little bit different, but we were partially funded by sport fish restoration funding. Next slide, please. Which is administered by the Fish and Wildlife Service's WSFR office and distribute the funds. So for that reason, they needed to go through NEPA, and we were the applicants. We did a biological assessment, environmental assessment. The camp was developed as part of the proposed action, and we did a Section 7 consultation with the Fish and Wildlife Service's Ecological Services office. So this was really a partnership program between the WSFR office, the ES office, and the department. A biological conference opinion was issued, and we were given the green light to implement camp and stock sport fish over the next 10 years. Next slide. At the time, these were the 18 species that were proposed for stocking. All except for one species had already been stocked throughout the landscape, with the exception of white crappie, which was has been stocked but was in a new watershed. Next slide, please. And these are some of the species that were found through the biological assessment, looking at impacts of our actions that were thought to be most impacted. Next slide. So we had three levels of species, and as you can see, there's a large array of species. We have fish, amphibians, and riparian obligate reptiles. We have some terrestrial species, and we had mitigation and conservation measures at all of these different levels of species. Next slide. So the CAMP program is really a metric-driven program. There are 39 conservation measures. The majority are metric-driven, so that means we have usually multiple projects within each measure. Some of the ones I put here as an example, we converted all of our hatchery production to triploid rainbow trout. CAMP does a number of measures that secure or reintroduce new populations. This can be amphibians, reptiles, and fish as well. There are stressor removals by every watershed that we stock in. We conducted a statewide live bait assessment, developed and implemented our watershed-based planning. And at the time, round-tailed chub is no longer a CAMP species, but at the time, we spent a good 3 years doing a status assessment for the then headwater chub and round-tailed chub. And overall, our funding commitment that is in the NEPA and our biological opinion is to spend a minimum of $5 million between the 10-year period to implement all of these conservation measures. At the time when we started camp, we had native fish specialist positions in every region except for region 4. These were converted into camp specialists. And then my position at the time was created as a camp manager, and I started with this program in 2012. Next slide. So because we have so many projects, I'm just gonna go through and highlight some of the ones that I think are really great. And these are some of our fish establishment projects. So these are some of the areas where we found opportunities to stock some of the camp species. And one of them in the Bill Williams drainage is Boulder Creek, which is a tributary to Burrow Creek. We expanded the range of round-tailed chub by 4 miles upstream of the barrier. And I want to acknowledge David Partridge in this picture here. He was really instrumental in a ton of projects in the Bill Williams drainage. He just recently retired last year. He found, I believe, at least five new populations of chub in the Bill Williams drainage that were never known, because he's essentially a mountain goat and loves to hike in really inhospitable places, and will forever be grateful to David. Next slide, please. Another establishment project was Roundtail Chub in Gap Creek, a tributary to the Verde River. We also stocked longfin dace in there. The specialists at the time were Jake Jager and Sharon Lashway that were instrumental in getting this project going. And we have an established population there in several miles of stream. Next slide. I'm not sure if it's a delay. Oh, there we go. So next, we have some of our securing projects. So the securing projects are pretty unique. They could be either direct threat removal, so we might go in and do a rotenone treatment, or do mechanical removal of a non-native fish in an area that we want to manage for native fish. And they can also be combined with stocking projects. So East Ash Creek is a really neat project. And again, this is one that David did in Region 3. And there was about a 1.5-2 mile section of stream above a dry section, and it was chock full of green sunfish and very few natives, speckled dace. So David went in there multiple times and did mechanical removal, anything from electrofishing, fishing, spears, whatever he could to get them out. He removed 100%. The desert, the speckled dace went crazy, and they also stocked roundtail chub, snore sucker, and desert sucker. So it was just it was a lot of hard work by David and other staff in Region 3 and others that would come help, but it really paid off. Next slide, please. Another neat project was in the Colorado River Slough. So this is a backwater in the upper Colorado River, at least below Glen Canyon Dam. So in the upper reach that's in our state, there's a slough, a backwater that was harboring green sunfish. It had warmer water, so the green sunfish were able to get off the spawn, which threatened the native species in the main stem and tributaries. Typically, green sunfish don't survive in the cold water, but we were really worried that this would just be a constant source population. So we did a rotenone treatment and deactivated with potassium permanganate, which is the purple that you see here, and secured, you know, a lot of stream miles for some sensitive and listed species. Next slide. Another one was a Fossil Creek rotenone treatment. And if you're not familiar with Fossil Creek, it is a really special place for native fish conservation and has inhabited multiple species of listed and unlisted native fish for many years. There's a fish barrier that needed modification. It failed during a flood, and smallmouth bass got above the stream and above the barrier. So we went in and did a rotenone treatment and secured up at least 6 miles of habitat there. Next slide. One really cool amphibian project that I'd like to mention is the bull tank establishment for Chiricahua leopard frog. This is in the Galieros, and this is another, this is a project by Sharon Lashway. So she put Chiricahua leopard frogs in this bull tank, and they started to spread immediately to the nearby tanks. I think as of 2018, they had expanded to 19 tanks in the stock tanks in the area and had established at least 3 breeding populations. And this is now considered a metapopulation, is considered for recovery of the species. Next slide. Another great project for a garter snake. This is kind of a unique one, but in 2014 with the slide fire, the fire impacted some of the fish populations in the habitat in West Fork Goat Creek and Oak Creek. The narrow-headed garter snake population there is one of the strongest in the state. And what we did was something kind of unique, where we stocked Gila trout, fingerling Gila trout, all throughout the system where the snakes occur for a forage base, while at the same time we're trying to start a recreational fishery there so that we can Please our anglers as well as the garter snakes. Next slide. And a more recent project too is the Northern Mexican garter snake established at Horseshoe Ranch Pond. So after the department acquired the property, we modified the existing pond there and designed it for specifically for Northern Mexican garter snakes. Once the pond was done and the vegetation planted, we established for several years a prey base. So we had native fish in there as well as leopard frogs. And then beginning in 2017, we began to release neonate Northern Mexican garter snakes that were captively bred by a public citizen named David Candielli, who's amazing at propagating these snakes. And we're doing a lot of monitoring. And this is also a project that was led by Sharon Lashway and Caleb Smith. Next slide, please. Some of the bigger projects recently that also have met some of the camp metrics is the acquisition of the Page family property, which is adjacent to Bubbling Ponds. This is about 31 acres, and we've secured that for Northern Mexican garter snakes. Anything that we plan to do on that land, we will do with the garter snakes in mind. Next slide, please. More recently, the Cold Springs Ranch property acquisition, which most of you are probably familiar with. And this was also a narrow-headed garter snake securing project. So the narrow-headed garter snakes have historically occupied East Verde River downstream of Ellison Creek. And we hope to do an establishment project here in the future and are happy to have some secured stream habitat to do this kind of a project. Next slide. And the last property, this was a conservation easement acquisition that was done last year, Gillette Ranch conservation easement on Hagler Creek. This is also in historical and current habitat for narrow-headed garter snake and round-tailed chub, as well as Gila trout. So some of these acquisitions have really benefited camp as well as the other species that may not be camp but are native aquatic wildlife. Next slide. We also completed our watershed management planning. I believe Clay referenced our watershed management planning. And if, in case you're not familiar with it, you can go to this website up above to look at our Santa Cruz watershed management plan. We had completed two, the Verde River and the Santa Cruz, and now we completed the rest. So we've completed 11 under camp. And it's really a way to go site by site, water by water, and decide where we have angling opportunities and where we have native fish opportunities and native aquatic species on opportunities and how to balance both of them. We involve our partners, and it's really neat, and we should be developing web maps for all of the watersheds this year. Next slide. So camp expenditures over time, as you might remember, we had a minimum of $5 million over the 10 years. We've been staying a little, you know, between $500,000 and $100,000 every year, but we had a couple of pulses, and those were for the property acquisitions. Next slide. And as we're getting into the last year of camp, I was excited to put this together to look what the camp impact has been over the last 9 years, and it really has been turning mitigation into beneficial conservation for native species. In summary, we've established or expanded populations of either one to multiple native fish species in 13 locations. We've established or secured habitat for native amphibian or reptile species at least 9 ponds, and that doesn't count the ones in Bull Tank. I didn't have time to put those there. And we've secured over 100 miles of stream habitat for native aquatic species, secured 3 properties for the benefit of native aquatic species, and completed our 11 watershed plans. So out of our task-driven metrics, 93% have been completed. We're on target to complete them before 2021, and this is our total that we've spent right here. And next slide. And I'm the camp manager. These are the folks that have been out on the ground doing work for the last 9 years. The first 3 years, they were monitoring to look for opportunities, and now have been, you know, focusing in on their projects and getting them completed. This was quite a different program because we had all these metrics to meet, and there's a little bit of pressure because we have a timeline to meet, but we've obviously been highly successful, and I just want to acknowledge all these folks and thank them for their hard work. Next slide. And with that, I will gladly take any questions you may have.
Thanks a lot for the update. I do have a couple questions, and I was glad to hear on the websites you plan on all the watersheds have those interactive sites where people can see where the native fish activity is and where the sport fish opportunities are. I was going to ask you about that. You answered that question because I think that's helpful in the long run. Do you have any idea when those will be completed?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Davis, we are hoping that those will be completed within this calendar year. Okay. That's our target working with our GIS folks. We're hoping to have one main website. Right now, our Verde River plan was finished 2 years before the Santa Cruz, so they're different formats. We're going to try to get them all to the Santa Cruz format and try to put them all on one website that's easily found, on the department's website. And they are really neat. I mean, you can look up any water that you are interested in, and it shows, you know, what our desired management focus is. What conservation actions or sport fish actions we might do. It's really great.
Okay, and the next question is, obviously there's future, is there a final master plan, if you take all the watersheds in Arizona, all the waters, where we're saying, okay, when we are all done someday in the future, this is where all the native fish activity will be, this is where all the sport fish activity, do we have kind of a final target of where we end up someday?
I'll answer this to my best, and if Chris wants to come up and answer, he could, but our vision for these watershed plans, it was visionary. So we wanted this, what do you intend for at least the next 10 years to plan for? Something we did a little bit of a change this year is our management emphasis. We previously had a primary and a secondary management emphasis. And sometimes when you have a primary sport fish and a secondary native, the message got through that the sport fish were more important to than the native fish. So we've changed the management emphasis to just management emphasis because a lot of the times they're just as important. They just have different management goals. And so we hope this is a visionary process and we can these are live plans. So they're living documents and we can update them as needed. If there's an opportunity for a native fish introduction somewhere that we hadn't previously identified, then we can, and vice versa, if a sport fish or a new species that we haven't considered, then we can, revise those plans and make them a living document.
So one of my last question is, this one is a little bit tricky, but in the case of our native trout, if my memory is right, we're using triploid even on the native trout under the, are we using diploid under native?
For native?
Yeah. For the Gila and all, those are, yep, diploid? Okay. Question answered. Thanks a lot. Very informative.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, proceed. Question?
Julie, Jim Guggenauer, great job. Appreciate the information. It's a good reminder. Each one of those projects, we could probably get an hour presentation on every one of those, of all the aspects that go into that. But when you think about all the science and the biology and the customers, you know, what are the customers in those areas really want to use those streams and lakes for? You know, it's just a testament to the amount of coordination and work that the aquatics branch is putting together on these projects. So we appreciate your efforts and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mr. Chairman, that brings us to, I think, the last one we can do this morning. Item 9 is consideration of amendments to Commission Order 8 for the 2020 and 2021 spring and 2020 fall hunting season. Our presenter is Josh Avey, Terrestrial Wildlife Chief.
Oh, there we are. Thank you, Mr. Morning, Director. Josh. Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, welcome aboard, Mr. Geiler. Commissioner Geiler, now. All right, so Tatanka Amendment. We've got Commission Order 8. As most of you will recall, we approved a two-year cycle for Commission Order 8 in April. And that's what we're hoping to amend here today. There are multiple opportunities for us to capitalize on some changes that have occurred or that we've recognized over the last year. So the first one being the House Rock herd, bison movement off the Grand Canyon and onto the House Rock wildlife area that had previously been closed. So this would be a modification to open an area for the spring 2020 and 2021 bison hunts. Also, the Raymond herd, there are 10 bulls aged 4.5 to 5.5 years old at the Raymond herd right now. Management goal is to harvest bulls about by the age of 5.5. So there are additional bulls available within that herd right now at the Raymond wildlife area. And so that would just offer the opportunity to increase the two bulls that were approved in April to a 4 bull for 2020. The House Rock herd recommendation, that the current open area excludes the entirety of the House Rock wildlife area. And based on some experience that we've had earlier this year now, there may be opportunities when bison are coming off of the Grand Canyon where they do come onto the wildlife area but are not near our area that is closed, where we have our current herd contained on about a 4,000 acre parcel on the very north end of the wildlife area. So the proposed area would exclude the closed area on the very northeast corner of House Rock and would allow the harvest of bison if they come onto the lower portions of the House Rock wildlife area. There will be a letter as well as a map. I do have the specific language that will be shared with the hunters defining that if you'd like to hear it. But the map that we'll be sharing with them shows, and I don't know if you have to look over your right shoulder there, you can see the area that will remain closed, which is, again, where we have our current herd that we're trying to maintain in that area for site fidelity in their breeding cycles right now, and do not want them to interact with the herd that's currently on predominantly on the Grand Canyon. The amendment would simply change the area for both the spring hunters for 2020 as well as for next year for 2021. So it's just the inclusion of that definition for the area. For the Raymond recommendation, we're looking at, again, that opportunity to expand from the current recommendation, which was for 2, to go to 4. 4 bulls. This would allow 4 bulls to be removed in 2020. An additional 4 bulls, bull permits, are already included for 2021. And so that would still allow a couple of bulls to remain if there were any special big game license tag holders that wanted to use the Raymond area for harvest.
Mr. Chairman, so Josh, just to be explicit, at the end of 2021, it would be a total of 8 bulls. Is that what mm-hmm. we're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Guggenauer, that's correct. We'd remove 8.
Mr. Chairman, the Hunt Recommendation Committee, which right now is 1 until you, I guess, put him on, reviewed this and supports the department's recommendation.
All right. With that, then, I have a recommendation. The department recommends that the commission vote to amend Commission Order 8, Bison, for the 2020 and 2021 spring hunts and the 2020 fall hunts as presented.
Second.
Make a motion to accept the department's recommendation.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, looking at the agenda, what I would propose is that the commission vote to go into an executive session briefly, and then we break for lunch, and we come back here at 1 o'clock-ish. No sooner than 1 o'clock, but like 1 o'clock or a few minutes later, it takes us longer.
Sounds fine to me.
Mr. Chairman, make a motion to go into executive session.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0.
Mr. Chairman, we're back. I think it takes us to item 9A, which is in the matter of Timothy Downs, respondent number 20A-002-AH-AZGFD, presenter is Linda Pollack, Attorney General's Office. I spoke a little early because it looks like our presenter's not here yet.
I didn't look before I whacked it with a gavel.
I didn't either. All righty, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like, we could go to Commissioner Committee Reports, item 11, if there are any.
Sounds fine.
Okay.
Any commissioners have any reports?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. So, as a member of the legislative subcommittee, it was a great honor to accompany Commissioner Davis and Commissioner Geiler down at the Natural Resources and Energy Subcommittee and listen to the talks there, and the engagement was pretty good. My other report is with up in Payson area, the regional supervisor, Jared McFarland, offered to take me around and show me some of the HPC projects. So I got to ride in his truck, and we went out and looked at some mastication projects and some water holes. And I never realized, and he convinced me of this during the day, that what a privilege it is to get out and open all the gates up and close them behind the truck. So I had a great opportunity to go work with Jared on looking at those tanks.
That's called what's a commissioner for.
And my third one was we had our quarterly HPC meeting up in Payson. We called a Payson Natural Resource Committee meeting, and we listened to the results from the HPC funding board and starting a plan for next year. So thank you.
Mr. Davis, excuse me, I'm sorry.
I wanted to just thank Commissioner Guggenhauer for coming down as a part of the Public Affairs Legislative Committee. We've had a lot of, as David and Eddie have alluded to, we've had a lot of bills, interesting bills at the legislature, and I think all of them handled very well by our professional team. It's always good to be part of that process, but hopefully we now know what all the bills are, and we won't have any new things to deal with. And it was a pleasure to be part of the confirmation hearings for Commissioner Geiler, and welcome aboard.
Thank you, sir. Anything else?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, we can go back to item 9A. Linda Pollack is the presenter from the Attorney General's Office.
Now it is. Thank you very much. The department has denied the 2020 application for a guide license by one Timothy Downs on the grounds that while acting as a guide, Downs witnessed and failed to report to the department a violation of a commission rule committed by one James Hammerlin, who was using an aircraft to locate bighorn sheep in a hunt unit during an open season. The commission may use the services of the Office of Administrative Hearings for a hearing, and we are the department requests that this be sent to OAH for a hearing in this matter.
Any comments from the commission? Any motions? Anyone in favor?
Make a motion to accept the department's recommendation that the license denial hearing for Timothy Downs be referred to the Office of Administrative Hearings.
Is there a second? All in favor? Anyone opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that would take us to item 12, which are director and commissioner comments. I do not have any myself, so if any commissioners do.
I have one, Mr. Chairman. It's really a request.
Excuse me, Commissioner Davis. Okay. Please, of course.
Earlier, we had that conversation about the 10-year memorandum of understanding or approval for the APS power lines at Planet Ranch. One of the things I think the department may want to take a look at is two things. One is can some of those easement agreements or right-of-way agreements mirror the agreement, the larger agreement for whatever that property is, as opposed to necessarily, and I know there may be things that limit the number of years, but I would take a look at, in this case, I guess we have like 36 more years of agreement. We'll be talking about power lines being laid underground. You know, the reality is you're not going to probably dig them up after 10 years. So it's just something I think could be reviewed, examining having those things run concurrent to whatever the larger memo of understanding contract, whatever it is, right away. The second piece is, especially in these power agreements, there's some people, there's some movement towards a deregulated electric market. I doubt it will probably happen, but in the event it does happen, that fundamentally changes the requirement for service by any provider in that kind of market, meaning they don't, under agreements they have now as for their status of controlling a service area, they have to serve any customer on the line. That would change under deregulation, and so I think looking at any of our power-based agreements and having them run as long as possible to, quite frankly, protect the department in the event the state were to shift to a deregulated, because we have so many rural areas. So I would examine, just ask you to take a look at that.
Anything else?
If not, Mr. Chairman, I think we'll go to future agenda items and action items.
I've got three. One of them is to send a letter to the entire delegation requesting their help and support for HR 925. The other one, of course, are the two that you just mentioned related to the right-of-way on Planet Ranch. Kind of looking at evaluating whether that easement agreement can mirror the larger agreement there, and then sort of repeating that to make those agreements long-term on the rest of our properties, evaluate that. So.
Anything else?
With that, Mr. Chairman, I would recommend the commission vote to go into executive session. And if you do so, then we will essentially close the public part of the meeting so people here can break down. But we will come back to adjourn.
Motion, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you.